morning, I've asked Pastor David Deagle from Blue Creek Baptist Church to lead us in prayer.
All right, let's pray. God, we thank you for the day. We thank you for waking us up and giving us life. God, I pray that you would give wisdom and discernment down this meeting. God, that we do what's best for the people of this county. God, we thank you for loving us. God, we thank you for Jesus. It's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Amen. Let the allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I want to welcome everyone to our meeting this morning. If you would like to speak as we go along, if you will raise your hand and I will recognize you. If for some reason I don't see you, just raise it again and I'll get to you. If you have something to speak about this morning that's not on this agenda, toward the end of the agenda on item number 22 is when we take comments and concerns from the public for non-agenda items. At that time, you can come forward, state your name and address, and you will have 3 minutes to address the board. If it's something that needs a vote, we would have to reschedule. You can always put it on a later board meeting agenda. The other thing I ask, if you have your cell phones, if you don't mind to silence them at this time. Thank you. Number 3, approval of the agenda. Are there any changes, additions, deletions, anything to today's agenda? If not, is there a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Second.
We have a motion by Commissioner Page, second by Commissioner Moody. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Bids and public hearings, number 4. The board to hold a public hearing set for this date at 9 a.m. or as soon thereafter as possible on the passage of a proposed ordinance to expand the limits of golf cart operation at Keaton Beach. And this is first a public hearing, but we will begin by, is there a motion to read this by ordinance by title only?
Move. Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Spradley, a second by Commissioner Dempsey. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Mr. Bishop.
An ordinance of Taylor County Board of County Commissioners which amends Section 74-4, Subsection 3, Subsection C of the Taylor County Code of Ordinances, which expands the limits of golf cart operation at Keaton Beach from Sawgrass Estates to 100 yards north of the corner store, providing for severability and providing an effective date.
Okay, thank you. Since this is a public hearing, I want to hear from the public first. So if you wish to speak on this item, please come forward and state your name and address, and you have 3 minutes. Yes, sir.
Tommy Malwood. I'd like to speak on this.
Yes, and your address, sir?
813 Bishop Road. I've been out here probably 20 years and seen the changes, you know, pretty much. But I think we need to change this section back like it was and add and go the new subdivision on the left-hand side as you go toward Cedar Island to expand the golf carts to that area, because we have a lot of people who live in there that do ride the golf carts back and forth, you know, on Keaton Beach. And also changing it, I guess it's north by the store, moving back up to where it originally was, making it a lot safer for those traveling in the area, and the changing of the speed limits would be a great, have a great effect on it. You can go through that 25 mile an hour and they pass you where you're going or coming, and somebody's going to be hurt if we don't do something. So thank y'all for your consideration.
And thank you. Anyone else? No one else wishes to speak on this item. Okay. Then I'll hear from the board. Does any board member have a comment?
I do. I'm fine with extending the DC toward Cedar Island direction, extending it that way. And I think we need to put the speed limit back where it was to start with, and I'm gonna leave the golf course business that way just as far, because it, the speed limit ain't got nothing to do with the golf course. I'd like to cut them people out up there that have no way going to Gibson Road in a golf course. People gonna drive, I mean, I'm in there, like you said, going 25 miles an hour, everybody gonna pass you, put on a boat, they're ready to get the boat around, ready to go fishing. Everybody gets in a hurry and ready to go fishing. I don't blame them. I think we need to leave it like it was, going north from Corner Store, and I think we need to add it to the east. And they can change the speed limit that way like it was, but people not paying no attention to the speed limit that way. That's my opinion.
Anyone else?
No, Chair. I must declare a conflict, and I'll sign the form with the clerk. What is it, form A?
B?
Anyway, I'm related to the Lundys who live on the Gibson River. And it affects them more than anybody else. So, as Father Evan was saying, in an abundance of caution, I'm going to declare conflict and not vote. Or discussion.
Thank you. If there are no other comments, is there a motion to approve this?
Please, yes.
Well, I just wanted to clarify with our attorney, if we kept the golf cart sign by ordinance and by law, would we not need to reduce the speed limit to 25 miles an hour for safety and
generally you reduce the speed limit by a resolution. That's what we've done in the past. My position would be that that if y'all want to put that on another agenda, because it's not pursuant to this ordinance doesn't say anything about speed limits, but yeah, you probably want to do that, but you need to check it.
But just you know, if all the other golf cart restrictions and parameters everywhere in the county, there is a, you know, it's 25 miles an hour.
Well, to be consistent, yes, sir.
To be consistent. Okay.
And where everybody would know what was going on. You want to put that on the agenda for next meeting?
Well, again, I'm confused. You know, the purpose was to move the speed limit back up to the corner store and the golf cart back up to the corner store. And is that not what the ordinance is?
What I was instructed to do was to amend the ordinance to that a golf cart may be operated at Keaton Beach from Sawgrass Estates to 100 yards north of the corner store. That's what I was instructed to do, and that's what this ordinance does. It's not to obviate the 25 by any stretch of the imagination. But generally speaking, what we do, Steve, is we put in a resolution such that we can, so it can be enforced.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any other comments? If the board has considered what Mr. Malden requested to extend it, like Jim said, you don't have to re-advertise because this says the exact limits to, if you don't consider that. Because it says on there, just what Conrad said, from Tallgrass Estates, and that's a subdivision. So I think Mr. Malden was talking about further towards Blue Creek Church.
To Tallgrass.
Is that correct, Mr. Malden?
No, it was just to include that subdivision.
Okay.
There.
It doesn't go beyond the subdivision?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
I just, Madam Chair, I just need a clarification on 25 miles an hour because it's not stated anywhere else in the ordinance. So I don't know where the 25 mile an hour came in as a whole. So I'm satisfied with, you know, moving the golf carts on.
Is anybody else confused or are we all clear?
I want to make sure now what you say and that one says will bring the golf cart sign back down to 700 yards of the corner store. I'm against that. I don't like giving things to somebody and they got a buttman bought car carts and now they can't use them to come to Keaton Beach to the corner store or down to the boat ramp. I don't think that's fair for people.
I can't vote, but now I'm confused.
So, if I understand you correctly, then you're for moving the golf carts up to the subdivision there on the way to Steenhaven. And,
keeping it up to Gibson Road.
And what?
And keeping it up to Gibson Road, where you can drive the car park from Gibson Road.
But you want the speed limit changed.
That'd be fine, but they're not following the speed limit no way. And that would keep people from getting tickets there. And, so they're not gonna slow down, that's safety. If you got what it takes to get out on the road, it's when the golf cars, about the golf cars. I can't help you with that, but I mean, the speed limit ain't gonna change them anyway, might as well have it where they can.
Okay, Mr. Bishop, would that create a liability situation? If we left the golf cart, area at Gibson Road, but yet changed the speed limit back to increased speed, would that put the county in some sort of liability situation?
Not necessarily, because, you know, that's a policy that y'all have the jurisdiction to do, as long as it is county, a county road and so forth. I don't know that I'm understanding. I just did what I was told to do in this particular instance, as a practical matter. It's something that, you may want to, do a little bit of study on with regard to what you want to put as the speed limit, on this particular part. And then you need to certainly put up signs of what the speed limit would be.
Okay. Then I would suggest that we table, this one.
Okay.
And discuss this further? Yes.
I disagree. The purpose of, I mean, you know, Commissioner Moody's preference on the speed limit, I mean, that's a conflict in itself. The golf course sign as it is, as I proposed whenever I asked for this ordinance change, was it's 14 feet of open rural road. Beyond that, it's another 1,500 feet where the speed limit begins to increase. So that's a half a mile there of rural country road for one golf cart that we know of that is there part-time. And that's a safety issue in itself, that there's a golf cart out there in the middle, in no man's land, so to speak. Traffic is not slowing down. If you'll remember, I spoke in past board meetings about the traffic was not slowing down, and as it comes to the boat ramps, even with blue lights sitting there. So it's parallel. I mean, you know, to have a golf cart out, you know, a thousand feet from, you know, in the middle of nowhere with all that traffic coming to town and all the boat traffic, I just think it's a safety issue to have a golf cart down there. They could do like the people do at Walter B's and coming from Leisure Retreats and drive on the shoulder of the road. I don't know that that's legal either, but it certainly would be safer. So I'm prepared, you know, if the board will entertain that, to make a motion today, and then if to move the golf cart sign, as you know, every one of you have, except for Mr. Dentz, have heard people and heard complaints about this, and wondered when I was going to bring it up. And I've heard it from the public over and over again, and I'm not for tabling this. If I'll make a motion to approve the ordinance as it is and propose today moving it back to the north of the corner store and to Sawgrass Estates on the other end. And if you'll allow me to make that motion, yeah, hopefully I'll get a second and we can vote.
Okay.
I'm totally confused. We don't want to rule as it is. I hear conflicts called to move one sign. If you got a golf cart running on the road, I don't understand why we won't obey the speed limit as written there or is posted, or we have a deputy down there to check it. And if we don't do golf carts, what's the problem? What is the problem? You know, one want to move it 1,500 feet this way, one want to move it 200 feet this way. I don't understand.
Commissioner Dix, as you're coming into Keaton Beach, when you go around the last curve, it's not very far until you see Gibson Road on the right.
Okay.
At that point is where the golf carts are allowed at this time. It did not used to be that way. We changed it at the request of another commissioner, I believe. And the speed limits drastically change far from the corner store. And I think they go from 55 to 45 to 35 to 25 quite rapidly. And the concern of some people is that, number one, it's a safety issue for the golf carts because people are not slowing down and obeying the law. There have been quite a few people, I understand, to be ticketed through there, and I'm down there quite a bit, and I know for a fact that if you slow down, trucks with boats behind them will pass you. And then you may have a golf cart ahead of you that they can't see. So I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the purpose of this was to, number one, ensure safety of not only the golf cart, but other people in vehicles, and to change the speed limit back to the way it was before we changed it, and stop the golf carts down at the corner store. So that's the way I see it, and I believe the way it is, right, Commissioner Spradley?
That's the intent, yes.
Yes. So, you have any more questions?
And I apologize, I'm out of order because we're still in the public hearing. I shouldn't have made a motion.
Well, I had asked, were there any other comments, okay. And nobody said anything, and then I asked for board comments, okay. And that's kind of where we are. So I think you're in order. Okay, so at this time, we have a motion by Commissioner Spradley to accept this ordinance with the changes that I just described. Is there a second?
This ordinance, as it is written?
Yes. One person that's declared a conflict of interest. We have another person that doesn't want to change it. He wants to keep the golf carts, having the ability to ride down the beach road, but yet he wants the speed limit changed back to a higher speed limit than where it was. So if there's not a second, then do we need to...
It dies.
It dies for lack of a second then.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to get more input from the public on it, get everybody up here, you know, that's interested in it, and both parties.
Yes, sir. If you'll come forward, state your name and address.
My name is David Beagle, 21028 Beach Road, pastor of the church in there, Blue Creek. And it's absolutely a safety issue. Purposely this morning coming here for this part, I made myself do 25 miles an hour, and I felt like I was watching the grass grow as I drove all that way, getting passed by vehicles. In the summertime, trucks will pass you no matter how slow you're going. They're not going to slow down. We've proven that. And the aspect of allowing a golf cart to still drive down the road if we change the speed limit back to 55, it's only a matter of time before somebody dies. So it's in the best interest of the public for it to be the way it was, just for safety. We can't help whether or not somebody's speeding or not, but we can think about the safety of everybody involved. And I think it's just the best thing for the county to do to change it back the way it was to best ensure the safety of our people.
Thank you for that comment. Anybody else have an opinion?
And one more clarification, if I might. The confusion, I think, was the 25 miles an hour, and it's just not sensible, or, you know, you might say it, you don't think it'd be allowable. The precedent is set with all golf cart areas that's 25 miles an hour. And so that's the reason to move it. move it closer to the corner store where the congestion starts, where it needs to be 25 miles an hour, where the public recognizes that it's 25 miles an hour, and not 1,500 or further feet down the road where it changes to 25 miles an hour. And then they've got a long stretch there, a long rural stretch, to maintain that 25 miles an hour. It's just, it's still a safety issue, and it's dire to understand,
I want to address this from my view. I have to agree that I think it's a safety issue, and we are here as public servants to ensure the safety of our citizens, and I am in no way in agreement with leaving the golf cart sign where it is and increasing the speed. Let me finish and then you can talk. I just think that sets up a dangerous situation, and I don't want to be responsible for that. So I tend to agree with the citizens that have come forward and addressed this issue today. And Commissioner Spratley, I agree with your view on this. So, Commissioner Moody.
I'm fine with leaving it 25 miles an hour, because if that would make it safer, but I don't want to face the sign moved back down that 1500 feet. When you round that S-curve, you can see the corner store down there. I mean, somebody can't drive a minute and a half slower. It takes you about a minute and a half to get down there. If they can't make that minute and a half without getting anything, that's a bigger hurry. I mean, that's just, it's a safety issue. Is people going, I'm fine with 25, but I just do not want to move. I do not want to take away from the other road. I leave the speed limit like it is. And people, when you ran that S-curve, you're looking at keeping people. I mean, it's not that big a deal to drive 25 miles an hour down there. If you got big, I really don't need to get out of no way, right? That's how I feel like.
Okay. Yes, sir, if you want to come back.
This is Bud Lightning. Dear horse, dear Tommy Maul, and Megan 13 Bishop Road. Let me say this. They moved the night of Frank Russell money for one individual down on Gibson Road. And one person riding a golf cart from that distance up to that corner store, that would only be the reason why, other than some kind of festivity going on at the beach or whatever, is a safety hazard, period. I've been in the business for 34 years of law enforcement, and that is wrong to do something for one individual of changing the lamp for one person to ride a golf cart. I just disagree with that 100%.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Anyone else? Yes. State your name and address.
Hi, I'm Gail Lundy, 1750 Jail, Gibson Road, and I guess he's speaking about me. This is not winning or losing people. This is about safety. And it was not moved for one individual. We were the first golf cart at Keaton Beach. We did move from Keaton Beach to Jail Gibson Road. But if you come out of there on a highway in a vehicle or anything, the speed limit that people are going, it's very, they don't even go 25 miles an hour at the beach road to the point. And it was 40 seconds from where y'all want to move the new sign from Jail Gibson Road. You're gonna say 40 seconds that y'all are fussing about here today. I timed it from the 45 to 35 to 25 yesterday to the corner store that says 25 miles an hour, and it took me approximately a minute and 34 seconds. I did it three times to be sure I was right. And then I timed it from the ice place where I was told it was going to be moved back to my road where the no golf cart sign is exactly, and it was 40 seconds. So you're talking about saving 40 seconds out of people's time. And if that's more important to you than safety, that's fine, but it's a safety issue. Campers are coming behind cars, boats are coming behind cars, and they are flying down the road. And I was coming around here today, and how many people go 10 miles an hour around Dead Man's Curve? That's the speed limit around Dead Man's Curve. I don't know that I do that. I know. But, you know, I just wish that y'all would consider that. And also, we pay a lot of taxes at the beach area in Steen Hatchie. And we need to get a camera with a flashing light that takes pictures of cars that are on the beach road, like right there going to the point, like in front of your house or somewhere, Pam, but, and take pictures of cars that are exceeding 25 miles an hour, because it's dangerous. And y'all can make money off that. Or the sheriff's department could, whoever gets taxes for speeding. And also, I was thinking too, golf carts are seasonal down there, from Memorial Day to Labor Day. Have a caution light at Dale Gibson Road, or wherever y'all put it, and do seasonal golf carts. And if people want to fly and get 25 miles an hour at the corner store, fly up there and stop.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Yes,
sir. I didn't sign up ahead of time.
That's okay. Come state your name and address, sir. We'll let you speak.
My name is John Morris. I live at Cedar Island. And I travel this route probably 40 times a month. I meet oncoming traffic going that way, four or five cars at a time. I have never seen a golf cart. So it seems to me that it might be an issue of the masses doing something for one or two people, or maybe nobody. I think it's out of proportion to reduce the mileage for people that I never see.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
I'm like Mr. Morris, I'm not on the agenda, but I live at 200 Sherrill Drive in Perry, but my family also has a house in, I'm Richard Spall, by the way, and we have a house at Dark Island. I guess the question is, if you're talking about a safety issue and other things, are these golf carts licensed to be on the road? Do they have a tag? Or do we have licensed drivers? I mean, you're talking about exposure. Insurance-wise, I mean, if somebody hits somebody or the golf cart hits somebody running around, do we have that coverage in our county? We look at that because this is a vehicle on the road, and if we're not licensing them, maybe we're missing out on tax revenue for the public because they're using the road just like a regular vehicle. So I think we need to consider that. I was just wondering, is that being done? What have we done here?
Well, I can't speak for the owners of the golf cart, what they've done, but what does the don't they have to have
that's
a tag?
In
and
it's in the ordinance. You just have to take a look at the ordinance.
That's all already covered.
In our ordinance.
What about insurance?
It is.
Yes, all of that's covered.
It's in the ordinance.
Turn signals.
Turn signals, everything else.
Everything else.
So they're broke, they're straight legal, they're ready.
Only during the parameters of the golf cart, not on any other open roads.
Thank
well,
you.
I agree with the safety issue and what we're trying to do here, but we just need to be considerate of the people in regular vehicles as well that are where we need to be on the road. I don't own a golf cart, I'm not going to put one on the road personally.
Yeah, all right. Okay, thank you. I'll let you speak one more time, 1 minute.
If you look at the part of the statute about it, it's 25 miles per hour and you have the golf cart sign, you are covered to do that. But before Frank had it moved and he did, y'all were going with the golf cart sign at 35 miles an hour and you were not covered without anybody being insured and stuff. So he had it legal. He had it moved and done legal when he removed it and did the signs properly.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Yeah, before you got here, I declared a conflict because of our relationship. Mm-hmm. And I said I wouldn't discuss, but with Mr. Bishop's permission, I would like to make one point.
Let's go back a little bit here.
Okay.
All right. You haven't signed the conflict.
I haven't signed anything.
Okay.
Yet.
Does this in any way inure to your financial benefit, whether you do this or not?
No.
Well, then you really don't have a conflict. You're just doing that under the abundance of caution, which we tried to keep folks from accusing you of partisanship, for lack of a better term.
In the abundance of caution, still not voted on whatever that.
Well, but when you talk about it, though, you
can talk about it.
No, you can't.
All right, let me talk.
You said you can't.
Thank you.
No, I said no, he can't. No, no. Understand this. If you have a conflict and you declare a conflict, then it goes without saying that you don't talk about it, because you could influence if you talked about it.
Well, I'm sure if I talked about it, I'd influence all poorly.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Bishop. I just want to say that the majority of the public here today has stated that they are for this ordinance. And I've been totally convinced by you that it is an unsafe situation. You made a really good case that makes me know that it is very unsafe. So, Commissioner Spratty, if you want to restate your motion, I will. If there's no other second, I will pass the gavel and I will second your motion.
I make a motion to accept the ordinance as presented today, the resolution and the ordinance as presented today, to move the golf cart sign to 100 feet north of the corner store, and on the other end, move the golf cart sign to Sawgrass Estates, and that would be the parameters of everything in between for golf cart and
okay.
Key Beach.
Okay, so we have a motion. Is there a second? Okay, I will pass the gavel to our vice chair, and I will second that motion.
We have a motion by Commissioner Spradley, a second by Commissioner Spiegel, and Steve has just repeated the motion, which is to approve the ordinance, as I understand it. Does the board have any further discussion?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So we are moving it in, or we're moving it out?
Moving it closer.
You're moving it from one end to the other.
Ma'am, you're out of order.
Sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
We're reducing the distance.
1,500 feet
for safety reasons, because it's such a broad area.
All right, any other discussion by the board?
Yes, sir.
You have more questions?
The same thing about safety. It's always a new program.
That's just a change. It's just adjusting the ordinance, okay. And that was the purpose
for
this.
It's for safety reasons.
Okay, go ahead. I'll vote.
Okay.
All right, all in favor of the motion say aye.
Roll call vote,
wait. Roll call vote, I'm sorry.
Mr. Brett. Mr. Dent.
Yeah.
Mr. Day? Abstain.
Mr. Moody? I'm against. Mr. Fields? Yes. That's 3-1. Okay. Thank you.
Ordinance passes 3-1.
Thank you. We now move to item number 5. The Board of the Home of Public Hearing set for this day at 9:05 a.m. or as soon thereafter as possible on the passage of a proposed ordinance creating rules and regulations for the Captain Springs Park site. Is there a motion to read this ordinance by title only?
Motion to read by title. Second.
We have a motion by Commissioner Page, second by Commissioner Moody. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Mr. Bishop.
An ordinance of the Taylor County, Florida, providing for definitions, creating rules and regulations for specifically the Hampton Springs Park site in Taylor County, Florida, providing for penalties for violation, providing for severability, and providing for an effective date.
Thank you. This is a public hearing. Is there anyone here that would like to come forward and speak about this issue?
J.T. Davis, A.B. Brandon Road. Just wanted to say thank y'all. The committee is very grateful that we're going in the right direction to preserve our history and our heritage. And we're very excited about all the things that county's building to help preserve Hampton Springs. And also, we just got donated last night a spit tube that has Hampton Springs on it. You can say half of it's rusted away, but it is, you can say maybe that tobacco was a little strong back then. Thank you.
Anyone else? If not, what is the pleasure of the board?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Page, second by Commissioner Spradley. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
It's an ordinance.
Roll call, Commissioner Spradley.
Aye.
Commissioner Dean.
Aye.
Commissioner Page.
Aye.
Commissioner Moody.
Aye.
Yes, that's by unanimous consent. Number six, the board will hold a public hearing set for this date at 9:10 a.m. or as soon thereafter as possible to determine whether the county will vacate a parcel of land located in the Steen Hatchie subdivision. There's a resolution with this item, so is there a motion to approve the resolution by Congress? We have a motion, is there a second? Motion by Commissioner Demp, second by Commissioner Page. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Resolution. Be it resolved by the Board of County Commissioners of Taylor County, Florida. And then it has paragraphs. It says pursuant to the proceedings for closing of streets duly published above law, proof of publication, which is attached. There'd be a hearing at 9:10. Specifically what this is the closure of a parcel of land, and the description is in the body of the resolution.
Thank you. This is a public hearing. Is there anyone from the public who wishes to come, state your name and address, and speak about this issue? Mr. Ridgeway.
Stan Ridgeway, 901 Riverside, Steen Hatchie. I'd like to ask the commissioners to look at some history about the boat ramp and the parking at the boat ramp. From the time the boat ramp was built a few years ago during the cold season, the parking lot has always overflowed. Upwards of 150, 200 trailers and vehicles have tried to park there, especially on the weekends. In the past, Main Street, which is the parcel that you're looking at closing, from Beach Road to Central, 35 or more vehicles and trailers parked there. Obviously, part of them parked on private property because there was no fence and nobody was using it, and the fish house was basically just sitting there. The land that you're looking to close that can be used for parking without violating private property is approximately 100 by 200 feet. That's by pacing it. That's not by putting a tape on it or having a surveyor or anything like that. That will park a tremendous amount of boat trailers and vehicles. This past season, all the roads in that small subdivision by the boat ramp had trailers and vehicles parked in the right-of-way. I'm sure the county got complaints from homeowners. I urge you not close that portion of the road because of parking during scallop season. I urge you, if you do not close it, to look at making that portion of Main Street the right-of-way easier to park on. Thank you for hearing me.
Thank you. Anyone else? Thank you.
Good morning.
Morning.
It's been a while. Jim Hunt, 121 Main Street. I'm speaking for my neighbors and myself. There are six homes on Main Street, which mine is one of. And we come to a stop sign to Highway 51, and there is no Main Street straight across from it. It's never been developed. There's never been a road there. And there's a big wet spot there that's been wet as long as I've lived down there. And obviously that's why the county didn't proceed with putting the road across there, because it was wet. The company that has come in that is proposing this to do something with this property, proposing to do some work with the fish house, which is part of the reason this is going down today. They own the property on both sides of Main Street over there where the water is. All of my neighbors and I see no disadvantage of them being there, other than, well, not disadvantage, but the reason being is because in their plan of what they're doing with the fish house and everything, and they own the property on each side of the wet spot, they plan on utilizing the dry side or the dry part of the wet spot to make additional parking. And we think that that is an asset. So therefore, we all have no objection. We believe, I've seen the drawings of what they plan to do. I think they're an asset to our county. I think they're continuing to be an asset of our county. But I really don't see, if the county decides to put parking there, you're going to have to address the wet issue and also the fact that they own the property there. So I think that's going to cause conflict. I think that the commission, if unfamiliar, would take a look at it. I think possibly they will probably explain a little bit better than I, but I wanted you to know how the neighbors feel about it. There's only six houses there, and like I said, we come to a stop sign and we turn right or left. There's never been a road to go across there.
You have a question?
Yes, ma'am.
Obviously, the owner is not here today that you're speaking.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, then I'll hear from him again.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions from the board?
Historically, and I could ask Stan this, how long has it been, just for my own edification, that Fish House has been closed and out of production, the old fish house there that they purchased? Mm-hmm.
15 years.
Thank you, Don. 15 years.
And the other property that's beyond and to the north off of Main, where the boat storage was that part of the fish house property?
That's part of the fish house property that too has been closed for 15 years. And from my understanding, all of that is going to be utilized, which means it's going to be helpful.
So there's been no industry or any activity on that property there for 15 years?
No, sir.
Okay.
Not legally.
I understand.
I mean, you know, somebody just pulled up there and parked. They didn't have permission to park there, is what I mean.
Right. Okay.
Thank you for your time.
Next. Hold on just a minute. I think he had his hand up in the next. Okay.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The property,
name and name.
Toby, 104 First Avenue, Griffiths. I do agree that there is parking problems.
Toby, what is your last name, please?
Griffiths.
Griffiths, okay, now go ahead.
The property that he's opposed to making to a parking lot, which the county owns, is half wetland, so it would not be able to be much of parking. We have a drainage issue. We have photos of Central Avenue that's underwater at all times when it rains. And we want to fix this issue, and we want to put in some infrastructure to drain that road.
Everybody see.
And we need to get right away to do that. So that is all we have to say to it. And
so,
thank you.
To be clear, you've purchased all the property, both sides of our right of way.
Yes.
And if we sign over or condemn the right of way and give it your
closure.
Close it, excuse me. Your
plans are to put infrastructure in.
Drain the this county road.
That's correct. So and maintain it.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Brenda Whitaker, 100 First Avenue Southwest at Roy's Restaurant. We're also a neighbor. We're in favor of you abandoning this and by the way, the road. You'll have some more taxes that will come to the camp. So I think the idea of a parking lot by the county is just not feasible. So let's make a little bit of revenue on that. Thank you. Yes.
Don Curtis, 5135 Preston Sheffield Road, and however, my wife and I own a place on 109 South Main Street. And as Jim Hunt said, when you go out Iron Road, it's a T. Main Street doesn't continue. That street was platted in 1921, 96 years ago. So in 96 years, the county's never seen fit to build up that wetland and continue the road on across. I'm a neighbor there, so I think what's being requested is a good thing to bring more jobs and industry and business. And it's a right of way that hasn't been used in 96 years that I can see. Thank you.
Anyone else that would like to come and address this issue? Okay, I'll close the public hearing and I'll hear from the board.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
This area, it is congested down there during scallop season, absolutely. And overflow that has been parking towards Roy's and in this area has been parking on this new landowner's property. The access and the road off of Riverside that turns in to the north, I don't even know that it has a street, but there's a paved road through there. Everyone assumed that was a county road. It is not. It is actually on property that they purchased. So access to where boats used to park, overflow used to park, is no longer accessible because they purchased that property. So it would take, some development to upgrade that property for parking, and I don't know that, the gang would be worth doing that. We build it, they're going to come. That's the problem down there. Okay. But I would be in favor of.
Any other comments on the board?
I'd be fine with closing.
I'm fine with closing.
Okay.
It's done.
Yes.
Okay. You close it, you have to advertise. You just give it to the person that on it.
We're following it. We're following the procedure.
You need to set your name and address, please.
We're following the procedure. This was advertised. You pass the resolution. You deed it to the adjacent owners of the property. We've had a public hearing. We followed the statute, sir.
Yes. Okay. Are you ready? Is there a motion?
I'm ready to make a motion that we accept.
That you close the road.
That we close the road and accept this resolution as read today.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. We have a motion by Commissioner Spratt, a second by Commissioner Page. Any further discussion? If not,
I'd like to say one thing about it. Mr. Bishop, will they need to have it surveyed? Will they have a description
No, the resolution has a description. Remember the last time we were here, we told them how to do it. So the resolution has the legal description by meets and bounds.
So it won't be no more expense.
Right, and it's point 47. It's like about a half an acre is what it is.
There's no more notice that has to be advertised.
Sure.
The notice of adoption of the resolution that you do tonight will have to be done within 30 days of today.
Right.
And that will be done, and then the deeds can be done. Okay, we have a motion and a second, and now we're in further discussion. I'd like to say that the majority of the people here today have been for this, and it's good to have the public to show up and express your opinions. And we do listen to the public. So now I'll call for a vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Awards recognition number 7, the board to consider approval of resolution extending appreciation and welcome to the 1st Florida Chapter Military Vehicle Preservation Association as requested by Dan Simmons. I guess I'll ask the board, do you want this read by title only, or do you want the whole thing read?
I'd like to ask Mr. Bishop to read the whole thing.
Yes, okay. So that's your motion?
That's my motion.
Second.
Okay, now motion by Commissioner Page, second by Commissioner Spradley. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Decision.
A resolution extending appreciation and welcome to the 1st Florida Chapter Military Vehicle Preservation Association, whereas Taylor County, Florida is by governor national proclamation the official tree capital of the South. I hope I pronounced that right, Dan. Whereas Taylor County and the city of Perry celebrate forestry and forest sustainability by hosting the Florida Forest Festival each October. Whereas one of the featured events of the Florida Forest Festival is the King Tree Parade, which showcases the high quality of our community's way of life and way of living. Whereas the King Tree Capital Parade typically has over 50 units representing forestry and conservation and civic, youth, fraternal, spiritual, and public safety organizations in historic vehicles. And whereas the past 3 years, members of the 1st Florida Chapter Military Vehicle Preservation Association, MVPA, and their historic Jeeps, trucks, and weapon carriers have become an increasingly important part of the King Tree Parade, with members of the MVPA bringing vehicles from throughout Florida and Georgia to make them available for public display and educational exhibition at Forest Capitol Park following the parade. Whereas many military veterans, their families, and other festival goers enjoy seeing, photographing, and learning about the historical MVPA vehicles that helped to win peace in World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and Iraq. And whereas some of the vehicle models owned and displayed by MVPA members during the Florida Forest Festival continue to serve with U.S. Armed Forces on the front lines daily, now therefore be it resolved, the Board of County Commissioners of Taylor County, Florida, extend deep appreciation to members of the 1st Florida Chapter Military Vehicle Preservation Association for bringing their historical vehicles to and contributing to the success of the 63rd Florida Forest Festival Saturday, October 27th, and encourages all Taylor Countyans to join the Commission in providing a warm welcome to MVPA members on this and every occasion, adopted by the Taylor County Board of County Commissioners on this 18th day of September 2018.
Thank you. Benson, let's come talk to us.
Well, your resolution said so well. I mean, it's 3475 in the meeting, right? Thank you, Madam Chairman, and members of the Commission, for your past support of the Forest Festival. And that for 63 years, and we appreciate it. And now for this resolution welcoming MVPA members. We will take this festival, we'll frame it, and we'll present it to them and help existing members understand that the fourth Saturday in October is where they need to be in the King Tree Parade and to be with us here. And this resolution will help us to communicate that to them. I think it will be well received. And we just want them to know that we're a friendly community and
that this is a good place to live, to work, to play, to worship, and be able to come back often.
Yes, and I appreciate those words, and I agree with you. And while you're here, I want to thank you for your many years of community service. You've dedicated many hours, and we are very appreciative of that.
Thank you.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. Dan, do you have a sense of how many members are in this association nationwide or in the Southeast?
Well, in Florida, we have a couple hundred members.
Okay.
And nationwide, I don't know, several thousand of them.
Sure. Yeah.
And last year, I think we had about 24 vehicles, and hopefully we'll have 30 or more this year.
Right.
We had a duck, some helicopters, a lot of Jeeps. And this year, we're expecting to have a couple of half trucks. So make sure you see the parade this year.
Sure will. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Dan.
I move approval of the resolution.
Second.
We got a motion by Commissioner Page, second by Commissioner Dempsey. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Yes. Madam Chair.
Yes.
There's a nice, large copy with a signature spot for each commissioner before you leave today. You got it? We got it right here.
Okay.
You should be signed.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah, you can pick it up.
We're going to put a line there before you leave for Annie Mae to put her signature on it, attesting to it. We're going to do that.
You can add that to
it.
All right, y'all fix
it right. Consent items 8 through 12. Is there a motion to approve?
Motion to
approve.
Motion by Commissioner Page, second by Commissioner Dempsey. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Item 12. Want to consider approval of a budget transfer from general fund reserve for contingency in the amount of $9,982 to cover the increase in Medicaid costs for the month of September 2018, as agendaed by Danielle Welch, County Finance Director.
Oops.
Amy, did you want to say anything about this?
No, it's been overrun.
Okay.
Medicaid.
All right.
Is there a motion?
Okay. Approval. Second.
Okay. Motion by Commissioner Moody, second by Commissioner Gibbs. All in favor say aye.
Aye. But I have a question.
Ted, have we budgeted enough money in next year's budget to take care of this overrun? Or will we be faced with this next September?
It was not increased, as far as I know. So I think it's just something that we face at the end of the fiscal year with some of these accounts. That being one of them, that we don't know if we'll have quite enough funding to get through the end of the year.
And I think it's according to the number of participants in this day, so you won't know at the end, and this is what it takes to complete this budget year.
Yeah. Okay, I understand.
Any other comments? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Public requests, there are none. Hospital items, there are none. Advisory committee reports, there are none. Constitutional officers, other governmental units, number 13, the clerk can discuss with the board speeders through the courthouse parking lot. Madam Chair, Madam Clerk?
I just wanted to let you know that I have been requested from people that sit, one person that sits in security out there. What happens is, you know, that first line right by the steps is open. And people will park and get out with kids not realizing that, and here comes somebody flying through parking. I think he told me he had actually stopped one or two, but he wants the board to know what kind of liability we might have if a kid gets out of the car and steps right in the floor of traffic. So I just bring it to y'all's attention.
That's such a short distance. How can they be going that fast?
Steve's back here, and he's there a lot. They fly through the parking lot.
He's cut through and everything else. Yeah. So it's pretty
fast. What's the solution? Brought the problem, bring us a solution.
Speed bumps?
Speed bumps.
That's what I was suggesting. I think we already talked about that one time before.
Wow.
Signage? I don't remember what kind of signage it was.
But just like this one on Keith Beach Road, they don't pay
no attention.
Good.
we just brought the board for your attention before you know what's going on.
I don't park. Everybody knows that I walk to the courthouse and I walk through that, and I know exactly what you're talking about. But I've got a question. Is that one way, or do they go both ways?
No, it's one way.
One way.
Do we have the one-way sign there? Do we have a one-way sign? Okay.
So now, what's the pressure?
I would think so. I got an idea. It's probably not legal. You ever heard it say that?
Comrade, the security camera down there, we know who it is.
Well, remember, okay, no, I got an idea. Remember when we had reserved parking spots for circuit judge, county judge, you know, and then we changed it and made it available to everybody? Just think about this one. That you reinstitute some reserve parking spots there on that lane, or in the alternative, another issue would be if you have young children, don't park on this lane, a sign like that. That way they have to park in the second lane, and then they'd have to grab their children and go through. I'm just thinking out loud, and I'm not a traffic person at all, but I have noticed that when I walk through there, you know, I'm looking that way to make sure that somebody doesn't come flying through there, and there's no reason to fly through there, you know, unless they've been in court and got beat and want to get out of there, you know.
Well, there's a parking lot across from the courthouse there, and that's a good idea to have reserved parking spaces there.
Well, I know that there were complaints, if Annie may remember, that, you know, that there was complaints about that, that I guess thinking that people were privileged. But I go to other courthouses, specifically Live Oak has specific reserved parking for the courthouse. People.
Well, one thing is when they striped that parking lot last time, they tried to get as many spaces in there, and I'm in the parking lot vehicle, and they beat it up. I mean, literally beat it up. So, and I don't want a designated spot, because I feel like I'm taking away from the public.
Sure, that was the whole point of doing
that.
That
would be very unpopular.
It would be very unpopular. I don't want my name on it. But
anybody
else might
want to. Sure. Strapping this car in there.
Madam Chair, I think when we took away the reserve also when we closed the other door and made it, you know, where people can't park on both sides.
Well, they took away the reserve
long time ago.
Years ago. Forgive me. Yeah. That's really, when they did it is really immaterial to me. But I think that it is, you know, an issue recognized, and as you approach the steps, no, it would not help people that park closer to Green Street, but the traffic should not be going too fast after it turns off of Green Street. But anyway, I'm chasing a rabbit down a hole. But I think it would warrant a speed bump there. They have, you know, plastic ones where you don't have to do a lot of engineering, and you could just drill it into the pavement there, and that would help to slow them down, and wouldn't be a great big bump unless they were just, you know, exceedingly fast.
Yeah, so you're talking about a bump instead of a hump. The hump is the big high.
No, thing. Not a hump.
You're talking just about the bump.
The bump that's 2 foot or so less.
Yes. Okay, that's
good. Maybe staff could explore.
That's an option.
Yeah, kind of like that.
Oh, they'll be jumping it.
Yeah, that'd be less controversial than designating parking spots. Commissioner Dempsey.
We just have speeding in this county outside anywhere?
All over the county?
You know, frankly, coming from law enforcement, and Steve can attest, you know, people, many times they're not speeding. You know, it's just perception, and it looks like they're speeding. When you're standing out on the side of the road, and a vehicle drives by going the speed limit, it looks like it's probably, it's too fast for the conditions. And so, you know, a deputy who is recognized and is trained in recognizing speed, you know, issues. So, you know, I would agree that the deputies realize that. The rest of us, you know, it may look like speeding, oftentimes it's not. So.
Commissioner Gibbs, did you?
You know.
But.
Well, it's a quagmire, isn't it? But I know one thing, a deputy president sure helped some of that. You say go in Tallahassee, they're doing 59. Everybody used to zoom through there. They don't zoom in there. There is a remedy.
That's right.
Now, we gonna apply it or we're not gonna apply it, you know, on all our areas.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Well, I think I'd rather spend a little bit of money on a speed bump than to tie up one of our deputies to sit out there. But Mr. Leahy, a while back, I had asked you to talk with the city concerning the parking spaces around the courthouse. Did you ever do that?
Yeah.
What did they say?
They said they take it into consideration when they're doing a lot of revitalization there. They would take it into consideration.
Yeah.
I brought it up in one of the
Okay, I hope they don't forget that, because I get a lot of complaints, and I'm a complainer. Because when you come down from your own Green Street, right there between the courthouse, that is just, the cars are, I'm way over in the middle, and somebody has to wait for me to get around, and they're just, they need to be more slanted. I think that's the right word. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think what we concluded is just get some, mm-hmm. from staff, some recommendations, maybe on a speed bump. Okay.
Yeah, make an observation. I don't go very often to Walmart, but out in front of the Walmart store, I think they got some yellow stripes. And I see folks going through the main road and they stop for all the pedestrians and shopping carts to go through. Do we have any painting on the on this lane we're talking about? I think the speed limit. I think we do. Maybe we ought to have a lane there about 30 feet wide where it's painted and a sign, you know, watch out for.
There's some yellow stripes across the alley where we go through there. I think there's some yellow stripes there across the stand.
There is. They are in the media.
They're for walking.
Well, that would help some, but I wouldn't trust that just on the stop sign.
I'd all put the speed up.
Okay.
Bumps.
Bumps, yeah. At this time, if it's okay with the board, since these folks have waited so patiently, I'd like to go to number 16 next. Hugh Thomas, Executive Director, 2101 Management District, to appear for district overview and payment in lieu of taxes.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair. We appreciate that. And I do have in my company this morning, our governing board member, Mr. Richard Swab, and he's known to all of you as well. And I'd like to just give a quick overview of the ongoing that are at the district right now and some of the initiatives that we've had. And some information relative. I know you all have are dealing with some flooding concerns down in Taylor County. We have about seven counties within our district actually that are dealing with similar issues at this time. And I do have some groundwater and rainfall information that I'd like to present as well with that. But just as a quick overview for the district itself, the district's actually, if you're not aware, the district's made up of almost 7,700 square miles. We're certainly the fifth largest district in the state. From a water management district perspective, but we are the smallest geographically. And most years fiscally as well. But we do try to do the most that we can. And we make up all or part of 15 counties. We actually share six counties with three other water management districts along our border. And certainly I know you all are well aware that the majority of our land use and our economy is made up of agriculture in this area, both from a traditional agricultural crop production, dairy, poultry, but timber as well, which is a major revenue source for Taylor County. And but we are blessed here in this part of the state. We've got over 300 springs in our area, freshwater springs. And the largest number, actually, highest concentration of springs anywhere in the U.S. as well as the largest concentration of outstanding Florida Springs of any of the districts, and also the highest concentration of first magnitude or large outflow springs as well. And we got 13 river basins across our district. Some of the major initiatives that we're looking at, our water supply assessment, which actually is a planning document that was recently approved in July by the governing board. But it actually is a, as I mentioned, it's a planning document to look at projected growth over the term of 2015 out to 2035, a year of 20-year document that we evaluate growth in groundwater use and impacts on our water resources over that time period. I'll talk a little bit more about that in just a few moments to make you aware of it. But also our springs grants and our river grants. I know the county the city of Perry has benefited from some of our river grants. I believe our staff have recently been in contact with Mr. Lakey concerning some of the flooding issues that you all are seeing. And we certainly would be happy to entertain considering a proposal to address some of those flooding issues and administer that under one of our grant programs with this. We also have our springs grants. We've been very blessed, as I mentioned, with the number of springs that we have in our district. We've been very blessed by the governor and the legislature to appropriate funding over the years. Since 2013, we've had almost $25 million in springs grants to address water quality and water quantity with our springs, looking at springs restoration efforts, similar to what we've done here in this county. As well as some of the other concerns, whether it be from wastewater infrastructure improvement or even water supply improvement projects also, and then our agricultural projects that we have. To date, we've got about 26 projects that have been funded. We are currently waiting on approval for our 2018 submittals from the Legislative Budget Committee. For this year, with our project, our springs projects, we submitted a request for a little over $28 million this year. The Department of Environmental Protection has reviewed those projects. They recommended a little over $10.1 million in funding to the Legislative Budget Committee, and we are awaiting their approval for those projects. Right now, it appears that we've got six projects. Mentioned to the tune of about $10 million in funding requests, and two contingency projects that will also embrace the silviculture industry as well. And those are actually, it's another $6 million for those two additional projects. So we're very hopeful of getting those on the ground and getting them approved and being able to work with producers in this area. Some of the benefits of these projects, we've seen that there's about 12 million gallons per day of water saved through our springs projects, and then a reduction of about 2.4 million pounds less fertilizer being applied through efficiency improvements, particularly with our agricultural projects that we have, as well as some of our wastewater projects and revitalizing some of the wastewater infrastructure. And then an additional 38 million gallons per day of recharge to our Florida aquifer. So we continue to look forward to working with our springs projects. We also have our new groundwater model, which is our new groundwater model, which is called the North Florida Southeast Georgia groundwater model, or NESA for short. We hope to have this model underway in late October or early November. That model will actually evaluate withdrawals over the entire Florida aquifer. Florida aquifer, I don't have a map in the presentation, but the Florida aquifer actually extends up to Southern Carolina and then into eastern Alabama and southeast Georgia, and then also down certainly into our area here in Florida. But this model will evaluate water withdrawals, permits, permitted uses within those areas, not only for us, but for Florida, for Georgia's impact on it, as well as impact from our neighbors to the east over in the St. John's River Water Management District where they're permitting. We have a working agreement with them to evaluate cross-boundary consumptive use permits with that. And so that model will be very helpful for that making those evaluations, as well as our projects. Where do we site our projects, our aquifer recharge or aquifer development projects, so that we can get the most bang for taxpayer dollars that are being spent with these projects and maximize recharge in those areas. We're also continuing, our staff is continuing to work with our minimum flow and minimum water level development, looking at those levels that are necessary for ecosystem restoration or ecosystem benefit out here, as well as considering the water use for humans in this area. So that's an ongoing project. We'll be submitting our revised priority list for MFL development in November this year to the Department of Environmental Protection. Now back up, here we go, thank you. One slide, some of the projects that we've worked with, if you like, on over here. Under our river grant, Project RiverStand is an acronym which stands for Regional Initiative Valuing Environmental Resources. And it's a grant program that the district has had now for about 6 years to work with our counties and communities. Some of the projects that we've had over here are the Forest Capitol Hall Sewer Service Project, which actually looks at taking eliminating septic systems and putting them on centralized sewer. Also our Spring Creek and Rosehead Lake Flood Mitigation Project, looking at some of the restoration work that I was speaking of earlier, that spring as well as flood mitigation in that area. And both of those projects are complete. And then our steam hatchet septic tank elimination system, eliminating about 40 septic systems, a benefit there, and consolidating those into a centralized sewer system for treatment, and certainly a benefit from a water quality aspect. And then our Stephen Springs restoration effort, looking at those springs restoration, silt removal debris, a parking lot renovation area, as well as reducing erosion from foot traffic in that area as well. So all of those projects, as I mentioned, are complete, and we're appreciative of the opportunity to work with the communities over here with that. And then where we're looking at going forward, certainly the flooding and high water concerns are a major concern to us, and I know that you all can relate to that with any recent issues that y'all are undergoing. And I'll come back to that in just a moment, but I will go ahead for the sake of time and ease the slides. We are increasing our outreach and our education efforts through a number of different ways. One is in presentations such as this to our local governments, also in our with our stakeholders and various community groups, trying to get the message out about what the district does, and not only what the district does, but what our stakeholders are doing, our community governments, our agricultural producers, and what they are doing from a water quality aspect, as well as a water supply or water conservation effort, to make people aware that things are happening out here that they may not be aware of from an initiative effort. Certainly working with our legislators and making them aware so they'll continue to help funding these projects here. And then we're using a variety of different media. I myself, I'm old school. I'm just getting kind of where I use Facebook some. My kids tell me that that's old school and it's about obsolete. But we do have a communications director at Swanee River. She's a few years younger than I am. And so she is very engaged in social media. Does a great job in getting our messages out. And one of the things that I would encourage you to do that we just initiated about 3 weeks ago is called Aquifer Alert. Because of our high groundwater conditions that we're seeing right now, as we get these storm cells that move across the district, and you know, we're blessed with rainfall, and I am appreciative of that, but it does change our aquifer level. And you can go on our website and sign up so that on a weekly basis, you receive a notification on there, and it lets you know what those updates are. You know, are our groundwater levels falling, or are they increasing based upon where we've received rainfall? That's a new effort that we've got. And certainly we want to continue to build our partnerships with our community governments. And whatever we do, we want it to be science-based, so that it's reliable and repeatable. This is where I wanted to go to with our high water conditions. This is our most recent aquifer map that was presented at our last board meeting. These are our groundwater levels up through the 1st of September, and we certainly received a little more rain since then. But Tom Mierke, who is our chief hydrologist there at the district, he presents this information on a monthly basis to our governing board. And what you can see for Taylor County there is our groundwater levels for the majority of the county are in the high category. Serving our coastal communities and in the eastern part of the district. That dark blue that you see there represents areas that we have where our groundwater levels in many places are in what's called the 90th percentile. What that means is that over record, period of record that we have, then less than 10% of the time, the groundwater levels have been lowered. No, they've only been 10% of the time have they been higher than where they are at now. We've got some areas of the district, not here in Taylor County, but in Dixie County and in parts of Alachua County, we are setting record high levels for some groundwater conditions in that area. One of the things that I want to point out, I think of last year prior to Irma getting here, August of 2017, what we had noted for the month of August is our rainfall at that time, we had received about 6.1 inches of rain over here. August of this year, we received 11.8 inches of rain in this area. And our 30-year average is about 8.6 inches of rain for that month. So we've exceeded it considerably. We're at about a 3.1, 3.2 inch surplus of rainfall right now in our area. This is data that's gathered through what's called NEXRAD. It's a digital mapping system that looks at rainfall cells as they come across the district. And we're able to, we don't have to go out and take a manual sample. We're actually able to go. And we actually have manual measuring stations that validate what we're seeing through NEXRAD on there. What we see from a 3 month rainfall, a surplus or deficit, June to August of this year, we had areas of this county that were between 5 to 15 inches of rainfall, a surplus of rainfall, over our running average, 30-year average. Southwest of Perry here, we've got areas that are greater than 15 inches that are showing that. Compare that to last year, in 2017, for that same time period, we were looking at about anywhere from a 5% deficit to about even a normal rainfall year. So we're definitely, our groundwater and our rainfall conditions are above normal for this year. And as you are well aware, that lends itself to flooding, particularly in low-lying areas. And I heard you mention discussion earlier about some of the wet areas on one of the parking areas that were being discussed. And so, you know, we want to try to make people aware that these are the conditions. We've been very blessed. We have not had a tropical system come through. It would be very devastating right now, not just from a flooding aspect, but also from a tree damage. You know, if we got much wind out of it just because of the saturated conditions. So we do want to make everyone aware of that. And certainly we have information on our website. There's an aquifer alert notice that you can get on there. And then we also have flooding alerts. We have a variety of different alerts that are available on our website, even extending beyond meteorological conditions. If we're doing burning in an area, you can get a notice that we're doing controlled burns in areas. Not much of that going on right now, but you know, it will be again soon. Moving ahead, want to briefly mention our water supply assessment. As I said, it is a planning document. It's a little difficult to talk about this right now, especially the recommendations in this, given our groundwater and rainfall conditions. But planning has to occur, you know, as an ongoing basis, whether we're in wet conditions or dry conditions. This actually looks at projected growth demands over the 20-year horizon. And because agriculture is our largest water user in this district, projected growth has that continue to occur. Our projected growth going from 116 million gallons per day in 2010 to about 161 million gallons per day. These are groundwater projections, not surface water. So that's a considerable amount of growth for this area. And as you can see, through the other sectors of our water users, commercial and industrial, and even our domestic self-supply, there are increases that we're looking at. From an agricultural perspective, Suwannee is projected to have the highest growth from an irrigated acreage production standpoint of any district in the state, almost 40% over the next 20 years, which is great. We want to grow the economy here in this area. But we as the district have to plan for that available water supply going forward.
But that is agriculture, isn't it?
Sir?
Is that agriculture?
That's strictly agricultural water use from comparison to the district. If you look at this pie chart for, say, St. John's Water Management District, the actual sectors of the pie chart are almost completely reversed from agricultural to domestic self-supply or even public supply, because that's where the majority of people live. So they're projected to have more growth in that area as well. And some of the other areas around the state are similar to that. But for Suwannee, we're projecting greater agricultural growth. And I'll be honest with you, personally, I come from an ag background. I'm glad to see that. I'd much rather deal with agricultural producers than some of what South Florida's having to deal with right now. Moving ahead, I want to mention some of the recommendations that were presented to our governing board and accepted by our governing board. The area that you see here in light blue, those are our existing water resource caution areas. Those are primarily in Upper Suwannee and then also in the Santa Fe region as well. In 2010, the Water Management District had a water supply plan and also a water supply assessment evaluated, and they adopted it. And what it identified was four areas in that part of our district where projected growth, it was insufficient groundwater going forward. What we have seen in our recent evaluation is that there are six springs and two river segments, that are showing that there's some potential for impact. Given this projected growth, there's potential impact to our groundwater, solely relying upon groundwater for our projected growth. So we need to evaluate that. So the recommendation in this area is what we had seen is those areas that are green, we're expanding those water resource caution areas out to the eastern boundary of the Suwannee River District and then the northern edge of the Leger County area. That was one of our recommendations. And then moving ahead, our second recommendation on this, the area that you see in the pink shading there, we're considering that to be our western planning region. Additionally, you see that area that's cross-hatched along the boundary of the river there and then down into Leger County. Looking at those same concerns going forward with where we're seeing those potential impacts, we want to evaluate that area. And that may, at some point, become a water resource caution area based upon evaluation of the data. If it is, we're required by statute to declare that as a water resource caution area over the next year to do that. But the recommendation going forward with this, that area that you see in pink on the western side of the river there, that is going to become our western planning region. In other words, we'll work with our stakeholders, we'll have a meeting looking at your projected growth, what your operational plans are going forward for water use, and gather input into that so that we can help plan for whatever growth or whatever projects you're thinking about going forward. And that's why we're calling it a planning region. And with that, that concludes my presentation. I'll be happy to answer any questions that I may be able to at this point. And if not, I'll ask Mr. Swab to come up and make the presentation, please.
I've got a couple of questions.
Yes, ma'am.
With all the water that we're seeing, are we likely to have more sinkholes to develop? Does that have, what impact does that have on the sinkhole?
Typically, what you will see, and it really depends, it's not a specific answer, and I hate this response, because I get on one of our permitting staff, because Steve often says, it all depends. But a lot of it depends on the overlying structure. Typically, the way sinkholes open up is you'll get a somewhat depressional area where water tends to congregate. Rainwater is typically more acidic. As it moves through the overlying soil and then hits our lime rock underlaying here, our karst area, it finds channels through that lime rock. Well, the acidity of rainfall then degrades the lime rock. And so over time, you get the solution holes that open up. Well, eventually what will happen with that is if it gets enough rainfall, that lime rock will thin down as it gives away, and then you get a sinkhole that opens up over time. So there's a number of different ways. I've seen sinkholes open up, and our staff have as well, where we have these ponded areas, and just the sheer weight of the water sitting on those ponded areas can make the lime rock give away. I've seen sinkholes open up in dry conditions, because what happens then is you have those weakened areas, okay, and as our groundwater gets pulled down, it takes away the pressure that holds up that lime rock. So then you get maybe a building structure or something in an area, and over time, that sheer weight will cause the lime rock to fall in as well. I will say, I would be on the, and this is just coming from me personally, whenever our groundwater conditions recede and get back to somewhat of a normal range, you're probably going to see some sinkholes opening up. But, I mean, I know that's not a definitive answer, but just having lived in this area of my life, and that's personal history and academic knowledge as well.
Well, you know, you read about all the large sinkholes of Central Florida, and then occasionally in this area that, what I know, we have a few just small, what I call small. But I sure hope that we don't get to the point like they are in Central Florida where we have these huge homes.
Right, as do I. I'm sure you all are very aware, a few years back, particularly around the Plant City area, whenever the strawberry producers were doing frost freeze protection. And that was what created those sinkholes at that time, was that sudden drawdown and removal of the support. I mean, water underground, water provides support for our lime rock system. And the removal of that, the drawdown of that, and then the sheer application of moving that water to the surface. And whenever people are doing frost freeze protection, they had to do it for a number of days in that area. If you recall, maybe that was 2013, when we had that week of freezing weather up here. That it created additional weight up top. And so that, you know, it compromised the integrity of the lime rock that was supporting that area. But fortunately, that's one of the things that we do try to consider when we are issuing consumptive use permits and evaluating. We look at adjacent land uses. You know, we can't foretell when a sinkhole will open up, but we do give indications as to, with our knowledge anyway, of sinkholes that are in an area that is one of the considerations that we have.
Chair. Thank you for coming, and thank you for the Stephen Springs help that y'all have given down there. That's been a help to the community. They really have enjoyed it. And I have a couple of questions on how are the other counties dealing with this high water? Is there any special activities that they're doing or planning to try to divert? You know, Taylor County's flooded. We're a wet county anyway. Your agency the one that, I mean, you're our water representative, and maybe Mr. Schwab is going to speak more on this, but this is not a new occurrence. It's happened here before, and it's happened in the other counties before. So is there anything, anything that can be done, future planning? That's what we need. We need a long-term solution.
Yes, sir. And what I was actually at a meeting in Dixie County last week, last Thursday evening, and that certainly flooding and property concerns were the subject of that meeting. And we at the district are happy to provide technical information. And in a lot of cases, like with our river grant project, our governing board has been very supportive of helping our communities with that. Many of those projects are oriented towards addressing flooding or flooding mitigation efforts. And we're encouraging our counties to look at their long-range planning in areas. We are seeing impacts now from areas where activities were grandfathered in, where subdivisions, platted areas were grandfathered in, and unpermitted development was allowed to occur in those areas. Some cases, in responding over these seven counties, we've seen issues where a landowner may have had activity on their land that they did not come into the district and obtain the permit for, and that can create some enforcement issues. But you know, right now is not the time for enforcement. Right now is the time to try to work with people to minimize property damage with that. But certainly the longer range planning efforts, we'll be glad to work with you all. And I think that's what Mr. Lakey had in mind in looking at some of our river grants going forward is evaluating, having the engineering done and some of the study done. We have available technology now, our LIDAR maps. I think those are all available to all of our counties now. And that's a great planning tool to be able to look at that from a large scale and evaluate the flow paths of water where our low-lying areas are at. And part of our outreach is to go back out, and we're developing some information looking at groundwater conditions and looking at our rainfall so that we can hold or work with the counties and cities to hold a town hall meeting to say, we're coming into storm season, our groundwater levels are such and such. If we get 2 inches of rainfall in this neighborhood, you can expect these conditions. You know, that's a major undertaking, but the district is committed to working with our
community. It is, and what we hear, every one of us here, is what are you going to do about it? So, but I mean, of course we say it's your fault. No, I joke, but... So some of the things we've seen in the past have been we weren't eligible for certain grants because we didn't have the engineering study, and which cost a lot of money in itself. And are some of those grant programs where they may include the engineering study as well?
We've changed some of that, particularly in our river grants. To where, I mean, I will tell you, from the district's perspective, our expenditure of taxpayer dollars, and I know you all fall under this microscope as well, that it's scrutinized. So if we have a project or a study submitted to us from a proposal perspective, we have to have some type of validation for the benefits of what those taxpayer dollars are going to provide with that. And granted, many of our counties are fiscally challenged, so we do know that the engineering side of it. So we've tried to have some latitude with our communities and working with that in our staff.
And with the local match as well?
Yes, sir. That's as well. We don't require a local match. It's great if we can get that. But with our ready designated communities, we do not require
So as you know, we're a rural county with our agricultural base is forest or private landowners. Is there any help or any, you know, I don't want to point any fingers at any, you know, private development or anything like that, but so there was some development that went on. We didn't regulate it. No one regulated it, and now it's causing some water issues many years later. Is there any action that Suwannee River can take to help?
Yes, sir. If it was done at a period whenever permitting was required. And then also on the compliance side, if someone does come in and get a permit, we're requiring as-built, and we have compliance visits to go back out. Granted, we're also the smallest staff water management district in the state, so we do have limited staff resources. But we are working to try to tailor some of that more on the compliance side to go back out and validate that this is what was planned and this is what was constructed, and it addresses some of the concerns that you mentioned.
Thank you.
Yes,
specifically in my district, there are a couple areas I really need y'all to look at.
Okay.
East Ellison Road. East Ellison Road, we about every 4 years we have this problem, and it's
about related to rain?
Yes.
Okay. You mentioned every 4 years.
Yes, and then on Coot Sadler Road, C-O-O-T-E, right, as you turn on Coot Sadler to the right, I have a little bubble there. And thank y'all so much for what you do. We really appreciate everything.
Thank you.
It's my pleasure. And I'll be following up with him on this issue.
Thank you.
I've got one right up. I'd love you to, Courtney Gray, I would love you to. I need, right now, my water's real high, still across the pavement. Now, when I really need to have a representative get with me and get out there and look at that, or to give them an idea of where we're at with it, I would love one of them to contact me as soon as possible.
We'll follow up with you on this issue.
I appreciate it. And I'll turn it over to Mr. Swallow.
Thank you.
Good thing.
Thank you. Just to give you a little bit of background, I'm a lifelong Taylor County resident. I'm born and raised here. Mr. Page taught me in high school. Not to say that you're older.
It's good.
Not all of them.
Terrible school, Sue. You know that. Don't try to be nice to Mr. Page. But it's an honor and privilege to be able to represent Taylor County on our board. I'm passionate about this county. I'm learning so much about water and water resources, and I wanted to encourage the commission today. Number one, you guys know where your issues are because a lot of times the public is calling you and ringing your ear. And unfortunately, we don't realize that we might have flooding problems or people sitting in flood-prone areas until we have high water times like we are right now. The water most likely is not going to recede for a while. Okay, and I tell you why is because the aquifer is at 90%. So that water is right at the top of aquifer level. So we're used to having that water soak down into the sand and go away and not being seen. It's most likely not. It's going to sit here for a while. And if we have another tropical system or something come through, that water is just going to be right back there in the same spot. So you guys know about ordinances and regulation and everything else, and I'm not a big proponent of regulation by any means, but we've got to be wise and smart about where we allow people to put their homes if they come into us.
Yes.
And I mean, I was out on the beach road just 2 weeks ago and I looked underneath a bunch of live oaks, and I'm sure I'd love to live underneath live oak trees too, and they're pretty, but unfortunately the ground is like this right here, and those house trailers are sitting in water today. Mm-hmm. Where 9 times out of 10 they're not. And that's just poor planning, I'm not saying on y'all's part or maybe the county engineer's part, but it's just poor thinking on our people, just not planning, because there's a reason why that depression's there. And I don't know about y'all, but I remember as a younger man, lily pads being out on 98 because the ditches are all full of water all the time, or even down the beach road, I remember seeing that. And our weather cycles are cyclical. We all know that. Sometimes we think that they're short periods of time, maybe 4 or 5 years, but really the longer term forecasts and stuff are maybe over a 30-year period. And we probably are at a beginning point of a winter time. So in my business, I'm planning for that. I'm trying to buy dry wood, trying to go to places where I know that I can operate when it's wet, and I'm still operating in those places that are winter, but I'm waiting until it dries up a little bit, and that's just planning on my part. And so we all know that there's opportunity to receive these river grants. I'm in those meetings, I'm approving those grants, and there's counties all over our district that are getting lots and lots of money to help alleviate flooding problems, to help fix roads. One thing I want to encourage our county to do is maybe look at sewage treatment. I know we have a lot of our residents on septic tanks, and that's coming down the line. Those septic systems, all septic systems that are being put in today will be outdated in another 10 years. And what I mean by that, I'm talking about the systems will be totally different, and it'll be very, very expensive to install those. I mean, we're going from maybe $4,000 or $5,000 in installation today for a new building, new home. You're looking at maybe $10,000 to $20,000 with the anaerobic systems and stuff that they've come up with. It works, cleans some groundwater, but it's expensive. It's something we need to be looking at as a county in our planning is how can we be proactive? How can we go and ask for a river grant or a springs grant on doing sewage treatment in this county? How can we project our growth? Where we, you know, so much of y'all's time, I'm sure I'm sitting here this morning, is putting out little bitty fires.
putting out little bitty things. You know, we're worried about golf carts at the beach. We're worried about this. And I know it's real issues that we deal with as a county. But so many times we're putting out those little bitty fires, and as they come, we very seldomly take back and sit back and look at the future of what we think we're going and how can we get some of these problems off. I struggled with the vote this year of extending that water caution area all the way to the eastern side of the Suwannee River. I really struggled with that, because what that does is that puts extra scrutiny on those people that live there that want to use water. And the crosshatch area that he just showed you on the west side of the river, that's not in our county, but yet it can creep over here. And so I would encourage this board, as the leaders in our community, to be thinking, how can we tap into some of these resources that we have available to us to be able to head that off? How can we have better water quality on all kinds of fronts? And don't just think small, think big. Think big. Because what we do today matters 20 years from now. And the policy that you make today affects what we do 20 years from now. And I don't know about y'all, but 20 years doesn't take long to go by, does it? Except lies. It matters. It really matters. And I don't want to have to be sitting on a board or pressuring a board member when I'm not there not to vote on a caution area, because the choices that we make with what we use our water for today affects the springs and everything else. I'm going to tell you something. That is a big priority by the Florida DEP of what that water quality is like on the rivers and those springs. And what we do way over here affects not just what happens on the Suwannee River, but it happens on the Eufemia River, the Osceola River, and Holloway River. All that matters, and all that's taken into consideration. Because what I've learned in our studies and everything else that I've been, it's been a privilege to be able to understand and learn, is that aquifer, that Florida aquifer, like you said, it goes all the way up to Charleston, South Carolina, comes all the way down to Georgia, over to Alabama, and all of Florida down here. That's a lot of ground. And what they do in Valdosta, Georgia affects what we do down here.
That's it.
And what they do in Jacksonville affects what we do over here. And so we all got to be thinking, and even though we're a small county and we have limited resources, I realize that, but we need to be thinking. And we need to be tapping into the revenue resources that we can get to be able to help us prevent. It's a prevent defense here, guys. It's prevent. And I will just encourage you out there. I have a check for the county. This is a payment in lieu of taxes. It's a privilege always to give you out there.
It's a little picture.
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be fine. But I just wanted to encourage the board to be thinking along those lines. And I want to encourage the board as well to tap in to your representatives over there. If I can do anything for you guys, if there's a concern, let us know. And Hughes is a champion of our smaller counties. This is a great meeting compared to what he just had at Dixie County last week, because they're really flooded down there. So.
That's a quick question before you conclude the picture. I love the thought, think big, but I picked up on something you said, river grants to fix roads.
Mm-hmm.
Give me an example of maybe a county that's got that, because we have so many culverts that need to be replaced. Is this something that we can apply for the river branch?
I might be writing checks a little bit too much, because I'm not a scientist, I'm a salesman. But yes, if it has something to do with flooding and water controls and other things, and culverts have a tendency to do that, because if you don't have the right size culvert, it can stop water up. And if you have too big of a culvert, but the science is there, and absolutely there's monies available that we just need to be proactive, because I see them coming across my desk at the district all the time, that small counties like ours, Lafayette, Dixie, even some in Jefferson County, they're getting their share, and I'm saying Taylor County needs to get ours. It pains me to see that we have one project out of 25. Mm-hmm. When we get several counties that have three or four projects coming out. And you know what? People in Taylor County, and we're just as needy and just as deserving as those grants than anybody else. So we just need to be proactive in that.
Okay. Glad you're here.
And I'm sure the commission would go a lot along with
you. Absolutely.
Anything else?
Thank you.
All right. Yes, sir. Let's get the picture, then I gotta get to work.
Sure, appreciate y'all being here today.
Appreciate y'all too, yes, sir. Sorry, man.
Sure, appreciate this check.
Yeah, I understand.
You get it too.
Come on, man.
Make you get moved a little.
He's scared here, yeah. Come on.
At this time, I'm going to go ahead to item 17, Jack Smith, Florida Forest Service, to appear to present Florida Forest Service annual report.
You got a check for us to dig it?
The checks that I offer aren't going to have as much weight as the check that you have. It's going to be a personal check.
Tell us all about it, Jack.
Sorry we're late, but y'all sprung a very surprise on us. I've never been to a morning meeting, so I apologize for coming in after the fact.
We knew you'd be here.
Just the highlights. The mission of the Florida Forest Service is to protect Florida and its people from the dangers of wild and fire and manage the forest resources through a stewardship ethic to ensure that they are available for future generations. Basically, all that saying in a nutshell is a lot more than that. We're here to serve the public in whatever way we can to help you. So we have all kind of different ways we can support the county. We provide fire protection in Taylor County through a cooperative agreement with the county. This ensures complete understanding of the commitment between the county and the Florida Forest Service for emergency response. We have four Type 2 tractors, which in plain English is four 650 John Deere bulldozers with plows. We got one 850 right now. We'll have a second one back in the near future for two big tractors. A 5,000-gallon water tender that we use on wildfires, and we also support the county fire with that in the rural areas where they're not hydrant system, so we respond to them for those. A 750-gallon brush truck and a 300-gallon brush truck that we use to scout and to suppress the fires in Taylor County. In addition, the Florida Forest Service Rural Community Fire Protection Program continues to provide equipment to fire departments at a little or no cost to help them meet their emergency needs. For wildfire activity, we had 47 fires in Taylor County last year, our fiscal year. And those 47 fires burnt 68.7 acres.
Do you know how many that we had the year before?
We had more than that.
Okay.
I can look that up, but I can't
answer. I wanted to know if it was more or less. I don't need the exact number.
Just a lower number with a lower number of acres. Well, right here, we have 75 that burnt 495 acres. We had some pretty good lightning fires the year before last, and being so dry, makes a big difference. In addition to support given to us by the Taylor County Commission, the Taylor County Fire Rescue, and local volunteer fire departments and cooperators, was once again very instrumental in helping limit the impacts of the wildfires for Taylor County residents. And we have it broke down by numbers. We had 6 lightning fires for 34 acres. Campfire is 1 with a 1/2 acre. Smoking, only 1 fire with a 10th of an acre. Debris burning, 17 fires for 19.6 acres. Incendiary or arson, 6 fires at 5.3. 1 fire that was started by children for a 10th of an acre. 3 that we could not determine a cause on for 0.3 acres. And miscellaneous fires, we had 9 for 7.5 acres. Miscellaneous fires are structure fires that get into the woods, power lines, stuff such as that that sets the woods on fire that we could have allowed. We issue burn authorizations for agriculture, silviculture, and rural land clearing purposes to the residents of Taylor County. We issued, well, through the authorization process, we are better able to regulate and ensure proper and safe outdoor burning. It's all about public safety. I said that once, said it again, said it several times. We believe that compliance with open burning laws through a comprehensive burning authorization process, as well as aggressive pre-suppression and prescribed burning programs, are all essential components of strong forest protection. We issued 709 burn authorizations for 9,432 acres, 1,970 authorized piles. We provided landowner assistance for 6 pre-suppression fire line filing requests to help protect 285 acres, and prescribed burning assistance for 175 acres. On-site inspections are conducted by Florida Forest Service personnel prior to burning authorizations being issued to landowners who are requesting an authorization for the first time and for authorizations being requested in smoke sensitive. And if you request an on-site inspection, it matters if it's your 100th time, we will come see you. All you got to do is ask. So. These inspections ensure that the nuisance setbacks and adequate equipment and proper control measures are being taken prior to the burn authorization being issued. We did 62 last year, and the compliance checks are often performed to ensure the compliance with safe burning practices and legal requirements. All the compliance check is, if you pull a permit, you have given us the right to enter your piece of property, and we are going to come see you unannounced. Not to try to be mean, rude, but to make sure you're doing everything correctly and legally, and to help educate the department. Fire prevention, this is near to me. Florida Forest Service Fire Prevention Division is its relationship with local citizens, businesses, organizations, volunteer fire departments, and the local government to help reduce the number of fires. Last fiscal year, we had 34 different programs in Taylor County. The Florida Forest Festival, Special Olympics Sports Run, and so on and so on. We reached well over 18,000 people. That's just the numbers we kept up with. I would easily double that number. We just didn't keep up with the numbers as good as we should have. And on the rural community fire protection is a partnership which Florida Forest Service provides local volunteer fire departments with surplus equipment for the purpose of supporting the wildland firefighting efforts. Taylor County is an outstanding example of what can be accomplished through this program. With the support of the commission, local volunteer fire departments have been able to effectively use this equipment to protect citizens of Taylor County. They were approved the fire department was approved for $5,381 under the Title IV grant, which they used to purchase firefighting equipment for the volunteers. We have our annual San Pedro Bay meeting every year, sometime in April. It was April 13th this year. And we met at the Rigoni Cookhouse. Any questions before I sit
down? I have one, Jeff, if I could, Mr. Chair. Do you still have the mitigation program, or are you looking for it coming back? What mitigation in the sense of the program you have to help property owners with mitigation?
Yes, we still have it.
Okay.
All we need is a call and we will come up.
Maybe you said that in your presentation.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Didn't even mention it.
Do you know roughly how many times you supported county fire with response to structure fires and so forth? Just off the top of your head. I know I've seen you several times. So.
No, sir. I'm not even going to guess.
Well, that would be, you know, significant next time.
We just, you know. We document that with an incident card where it's mutual aid.
There you go. Okay.
Now, could we? Yes, but just be.
A mutual aid could be with emergency management or whomever going to search and rescue or whatever. Okay. Okay. I don't know.
We don't document that. Unless it turns into a wild and fire.
Okay.
Or a wood star and then stop.
Understand.
Anything else?
No, sir.
Yes, sir.
Jackie, if you have any funds to assist private landowners, you might want to replant or plant trees. And
that would be a question for the next gentleman.
Okay, you're going to handle that more.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's get a discussion. Anything else for me?
I think. Anybody else?
Y'all know how to get in touch with me, so
you got to do it. We're assigned to you. Thank you, Jack.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Eric Black. I'm the district manager, actually, for the Perry District. I not only cover Taylor County, I cover Dixie, Lafayette, and Madison counties. I'm here today on behalf of our county forester who had a conflict in scheduling, and I was going to present the cooperative forestry assistance side of his of our annual report. Cooperative forestry assistance is the kind of the other leg of what we do in Florida Forest Service. You've heard kind of the emergency response, firefighting side of it, but we also work directly one-on-one with landowners on their land management needs, not just forestry needs, but wildlife and hunting needs, whatever they want to do to manage their land. We'll even get the Department of Environmental Protection involved, or the Natural Resource Conservation Service, to maximize the information that the landowner's getting. One of the reasons why we do that as a state organization, when there are private entities that do this also, as you very well know, there's consultants out there that do the same service. Many consultants, they don't want to drive out to the edge of the marsh for a 10-acre parcel of land that they may make $160 off of. It's just financially, for many consultants, it doesn't make sense to drive, and they may be in Tallahassee, so you're looking at maybe a 2.5-3 hour drive one way to meet with a landowner that may have 5 or 10 acres. And Florida Forest Service recognizes that there's still valuable acreage out there that we need to make sure is getting good management, because be it 5 or 10 acres, that's still wood that feeds our mill, that's still forage that feeds our wildlife. So it's a very valuable service we provide in Florida Forest Service, called the Cooperative Forestry Assistance Program. Last year we had 138 assists here in Taylor County, covering about 5,000 acres. So that includes maybe some big landowners with 4 or 5 100 acres and lots of little landowners with the 5 and the 10 acre tracts that they're looking for information on. We have, in Taylor County, we have 71 landowners that are covered under a federal program called the Stewardship Program. And that's where we write a very detailed management plan with other agencies. So Fish and Wildlife will work with us, and Natural Resource Conservation Service will do the soil side of things. The Farm Service Agency may try and get some funds for them to help with assistance. And it covers almost, it covers 16,500 acres, those 71 landowners. And one of the things that this does is by them following our management plan and the guidelines we've offered them, it also helps them become a forest stewardship property where they can get that emblem on their wood when they harvest their wood, that the wood is now, but there's a stewardship designation that it allows their wood to be, that you know, it hasn't been, the land is being used in a sustainable way, that we're not just taking from the land, that we're actually worried about nutrients, we're worried about the soil runoff, that we're not doing damage to the rivers and things like that. And that's where we as a professional forester come out and verify that yes, they're treating the land so that it's available for generations to come. And with that, they get like a higher designation on their wood when they sell their wood. That the sustainable forestry initiative. And you'll see that when you buy paper, you'll see the little SFI emblem. Or when you buy wood at certain places, you'll see the SFI. And that means, you know, the whole big kick on, oh, I want to go organic, I want to go green. This is kind of part of that we're wanting to protect the forest for more than just generations of timber. Because just taking timber off of there and never thinking about, well, am I putting too many fertilizers on there? Am I putting too many chemicals on the land? You end up poisoning the land. So by following the stewardship plan, and here in Taylor County, we have over 16,000 acres that are involved with that, of just the small landowners. There's big landowners that are 10,000 and above that we would never even deal with that are also involved with that. So it's something to be proud of, that we're in Taylor County, we're thinking about more than just let's get the wood to the mill, grow them and mow them, pines and limes type of thing, that we're really doing something extra than that. We're thinking about our future. We do have the Southern Pine Beetle Prevention and Assistance Program, and every year we offer that up. We put a news article in the paper. We send it out on our Twitter account that the sign-up period is open. Landowners are allowed to get up to $10,000 to replant or plant new either longleaf pine or slash pine on their property. It'll help for the restoration of the property, so like cleaning up the property after a harvest, and of course our advice and a management plan on what we believe is the best tree for the best site. As with anything else, if you put a live thing in the wrong place, it's not going to do very well. So we give them the best advice of, okay, on this soil, with this drainage or this floodplain, this is the best tree to put out here. Because high and dry sites, you don't want to put a wet tree, and vice versa. You don't want to put a dry tree in a wet site. So we give them that advice, but it does qualify them for up to $10,000. What it is it's a repayment for a portion of the cost. So it's called a cost share. And that it's a very big help. In the 16-17 year, we didn't have anybody approved in actually any of our counties. There was very little available. This year, there's a bit more money available, and I believe there's a few that were approved in Taylor County, and I don't have the numbers on that.
It's a 50-50.
It's not. It's actually on some things, it's 50-50, and on some things, it's like 70% they pay. they pay for and 30% the landowner pays for. It just depends on what it is, and it depends on at what price you got it for. So if you've got a guy who's really good at raking, and he gives it to you at a good price, you may end up only having to pay 20%. It's not based off of what you pay, it's based off of what you did, and they pay back a certain amount for that. So like some herbiciding, they'll pay back $30 to $50 an acre. You may only pay $70 or $80 an acre, depending on how you have it done and the number of acres.
What's the minimum acreage?
On that program, I want to say it's 15 acres. I don't have the guidelines in front of me. It might be 10 or 15 acres. For the stewardship program, that's 20 acres. That's a federal program. The Southern Pine Beetle program, the goal of it is to make healthy forests that are not affected by southern pine beetle. And so I think the minimum might be 10 acres. Yeah, I could check on that and get back to y'all. We fly the county every year for southern pine beetle, which is it's a voracious pest of pines. And I flew it personally twice last year. I got experience flying for southern pine beetle since 1993. And last year, the only thing we had was there was one site that Fish and Wildlife was dealing with. It was about 120 acres, but they pretty much dealt with that. I flew it just 2 months ago. That site's kind of petered itself out. Wherever they've gone away, and they're not in Taylor County, because I've flown the county and it's clean so far.
That's the only hope for standard timber that's got beetles, is just to harvest it.
That's typically the best route, but you know, if it's southern pine beetle, we want to make sure they harvest it correctly and we monitor it after, because it is a voracious beetle.
If you don't harvest it correctly, it gets on the adjacent.
Exactly. So we usually harvest with a little bit of a buffer, and then if the person has the money, we'll even spray a little bit of an insecticide out there just to really make sure. But you can have up to 10,000 beetles per tree.
We had that problem one time, and back then, when we were advised to use Lindane.
Lindane. Yeah, problem with Lindane, it's very restricted now because it gets into the water systems. There was a case here in America where they used so much Lindane on the pine trees that it was actually being found in like people's urine. And wow. It got into the drinking water system somehow.
It doesn't work.
I think what they use now is one of the permethrins, like permethrin, that type of thing. But that's also a pretty powerful chemical. That's what they use for like head lice. You got to be real careful with that. But it's a massive topic. Quick aside, I got to share this with you. The first time I ever talked about flying for southern pine beetles and saying that I was looking for this beetle, it was in front of a county commissioner group. I'm not going to say what county it was, but it was not Taylor County. And all the commissioners were looking at each other and whispering, and I'm like, oh, boy, they're going to pop a question on me. This was over 20 years ago. And one of the commissioners says, Mr. Black, we have got to ask you, how big are these beetles that you can see them from an airplane? And I was like, they're very big beetles. But no, they're smaller than a grain of rice. Urban forestry, I just wanted to kudos to the city of Perry. This is their 26th year as being recognized as a Tree City USA. And that's something really, that's really proud. That's something to be really proud of. Other than that, the county forester went through 50 hours of continuing education this year. He's big on getting educated and staying up to speed on policies, procedures, and new things that he can provide his residents that ask for assistance. And other than that, if there's any questions for you, I'd be glad to answer. And I just want to say it's always a pleasure working with Taylor County. We've always just had a great relationship with you, and we appreciate that.
Any questions?
How would a 8 to 10 acre home owner get started in the city of Pineville?
We could go out there. It doesn't cost us to go out there and look. We go out there, look, and we'll give them the advice. It depends on, you know, what's out there now. Do we need to clean it out and then put in pines? What their goals are. Are they wanting to just do pines and limes because they want to rake pine straw off of that? So we would kind of work with them, what species would they want. But if they call our office, we'll have the county forester come out and take a look, and that's what we do, is get people started.
And that would get the designation from the homeowner to agricultural?
It's an agricultural classification, as Mr. Radcliffe has made sure, yeah, that he's made sure that we say it's not an exemption,
okay.
It's a classification.
Okay.
But what that does, it does reduce down the taxes,
yes,
of the person, because the idea is that you're going to end up paying taxes on that wood at some point when you go to sell that.
Okay, so I went to Mr. Ratman's office yesterday and picked up the application.
Mm-hmm.
So I should see him first about getting the pines planted, or?
You should see us. Yeah. Yeah, I can have the county forester make contact with you, and y'all can kind of talk about what your goals are.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rick, real quick, you said something earlier, the Southern Vine Beetle program, reforestation program or whatever, mm-hmm. And you mentioned a couple of pine trees, longleaf or whatever. Are there natural trees like that that are resistant to the Southern Pine Beetle?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Of course, genetically, we've worked on breeding the better tree, but naturally, the trees that are out there have kind of culled themselves out as being the better genetic species.
Natural pine.
Yeah. Yeah, and so some people like that. They want a natural look, and they're like, you know, I'm going to use the trees that were already out here to produce more trees.
Yep.
And that's another thing we can provide advice on how to do that. But we are in our, I think it's the fourth generation of improved slash pine and second generation of improved longleaf pine. But the key is always the right tree for the right site.
Sure. Thank you.
Someone told me y'all were giving away pine trees again.
We don't give them away. Every now and then, on a limited basis, we get people who call us and say that they have finished planting all their trees and they have a few hundred left over, and we try and get the word out, but we're talking about small trees.
Yeah.
And they just, it's people that don't want to see it go to waste in a field.
Well, I want to say I appreciate y'all's presence. I see you in different places around town, different events, and it's always good to see you. Thank you for what you do for us. We appreciate it, and thank you for being here.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Yes. So the local fellow, if I want to talk with somebody, who do I need to call?
It's Jared Beecham, but what, on the last page of the report, his phone number is there. That's 850-661-2014. That's his cell number. But feel free to call that, and he'll set up an appointment with you, and he'll come out, and you'll walk it with him.
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks again.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to go back to item 14. The board to consider appointing one member to the Big Bend Water Authority, BBWA Board of Directors, as agenda by Mark Redlin, General Manager. As I went through the packet, I saw that there was one applicant, Mr. Hugh Martin Pierce. Is there a motion to?
I'll move.
Second.
Okay, motion by Commissioner Gibbs, second by Commissioner Spradley. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Item 15, the board to consider appointing one member to the Taylor Coastal Water and Sewer District Board, TCWSD, as agenda by Lynette Sittner, office manager. On this one, when I was looking at the packet, under at the top, under the subject title, the request named William H. Hubsford, but then under the statement of issue, it named Donnie had called, so did anybody else?
I noticed that, I was gonna ask about it.
That was a typo, I believe their last agenda request was for that.
So it is Diane Carlton?
Yes, ma'am.
As the applicant?
Yes.
Okay, is there a motion, to appoint Diane Carlton?
Sure.
A motion by Commissioner Spradley, second by Commissioner Moody, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign, motion carries. County staff items, number 18, the board to consider approval of policy for catastrophic inmate medical insurance as agenda by the Assistant County Administrator.
Our request is to renew the inmate medical catastrophic medical insurance policy for next fiscal year. Staff did look at different options, as we said we would. However, when we review our inmate population and the trend of the types of medical treatment that the board is currently, or the taxpayers are currently paying for, we do not feel that a plan with a lower deductible is going to meet the needs, because we are able to negotiate the impact of these bills significantly. And we do that by offering prompt payment, and we are quite insistent upon requesting discounts from every single provider. And they have been quite generous, I will say. And as long as we pay promptly, seems to be the phrase that helps us the most.
Yes, it's me.
Yes, sir. I think you told me that several years ago. Yes. So, and to add to the concern about these policies, even if we were to purchase a policy with a higher deductible, the inmate population has increased significantly. That alone is going to raise the cost of the existing policy almost $7,000. And
how much?
About $7,000, I believe.
Okay.
And that's with going back to the carrier and asking them to please reduce the increase that they gave us. We were able to negotiate from about a 5% increase to a little over 2%. They would not come off of that little bit of increase. And the reason for that is because our inmate population has increased, our average daily population, to about 130 inmates. It's increased that much. Now, we pay per inmate per day, is how we pay on this policy. So the fact that it's increased that much is going to increase your premium. Well, added to that is that's just 30 more inmates, which puts us at a higher risk, to be honest. Just having that many more inmates is going to increase the risk. So when I reviewed our medical expenses, I will say that this is more of a compilation of we have more inmates to care for. So that is going to increase your cost. We will probably not have sufficient funds to get through the end of the budget year, I will say, because just going from a population of less than 100 to 130 is that many more people who need medical care and medication. So we're not looking at large catastrophic claims that we could save money on by lowering the deductible. Even though this is the only item that's on the agenda, I will say that just having that many more inmates to care for is going to increase your costs exponentially. And that's just, I believe, the nature of the business. So we did review other policies. Now, the one thing about this particular policy that gives us heartburn is that they earn a pretty high premium on this. The commission is 17%, which is quite high. But I believe they were not willing to negotiate that down as industry standard. So I would say we probably just need to move forward with this policy just in case. There were a catastrophic medical condition, which could happen at any time. And some of these inmates cannot be released. They have to be held in custody. So I don't know that we need to take on that risk. Of course, that's your decision. But what I would say is within the next year, I do believe staff needs to diligently search for either another policy or some way that we can look at different solutions, maybe even a lower commission or something to that effect.
At the cost of medical care now, I don't want to take the risk. I'd like you to self-insure. We need some catastrophic coverage out there. So what's your recommendation?
We would recommend that we move forward with it's option one. Actually, when we renegotiated, this is the only option they sent us. It's a $40,000 deductible, $250,000 specific maximum, and it's based upon 130 inmates. Now, the only way to maybe try to get that cost down some is if we go back to paying monthly, but I'm a little afraid to take that risk because if the population increases, then that's going to go up every month, and it's quite laborious to have to pay this every month and get the population, and it seems to move easier for us if we just pay once a year.
Madam Chair, in order, I'll move the staff recommendation.
Second. We have a motion by Commissioner Page, second by Commissioner Gibbs. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. I'd like to charge staff with just go ahead as soon as you think it's the right time, and let's go ahead and proactive and see what we can find. This one expires on the 30th.
Yes.
I believe I remember the 30th, so we don't have time to do anything else. But I would think for the coming year that we, charge somebody to.
Yes, we can do that. Marty and I can work together on that. And they've done a great job helping to manage these costs. It's just having the increase in inmates, which makes it more difficult.
Right.
Thank you so much.
That's a good thing and a bad thing.
Yes, sir.
Increasing the inmates,
yes.
Solving crime, but it is costing us the housing.
Catch 22.
Madam Chair, is included in your motion the ability to transfer funding from contingency to cover the remainder of the policy?
No other place to get it, I know.
Okay.
I'll make that part of the motion.
Okay, thank you.
Second.
All right.
Okay.
Perfect. Second.
Okay. Item 19, the board to consider approval of the standard form of agreement with TCA Electrical Contractors, Inc. for the upgrade airfield lighting project at Perry Foley Airport as agenda by Melody Cox, Grants Director. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Second.
We've got a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Wait, just one second. Just
yes.
One second. In reviewing the standard form contract, I would recommend that it be put in that this contract is governed by the laws of Florida, and then venue would be exclusively in Taylor County. Add that to that. That's my recommendation. Add that to
that.
I'll
add that
to
my question.
Thank you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion is carried. Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Item 20, the board to consider acceptance of the Federal Emergency Management Agency staffing for adequate fire and emergency response. SAFER grant as agenda by Dan Cassell, Fire Chief. Yes, sir.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I am pleased to announce, if you remember months back, I asked if we could apply for this grant. I said it was a very highly competitive grant and it was going to be hard to get. Of the thousands of fire departments that applied, we were one of about 300 that was chosen to get. So I'm very, very proud to present that to you. Move forward with it. Any information?
Okay. Right. Yeah, there's a match, right? Yes. $79,926.
And if you remember what it is, the first 2 years, the federal government will put up 75% of the cost for salaries and benefits, and then year three, they'll put up 35%. So in this upcoming fiscal year, we would need the 25% match.
Okay. Job well done, thank you.
It was a good day when I got that email.
Yes, when I read that, I was very pleased too.
Questions? I wasn't on board when that was applied for. So fill me in on what your plans are for the grant.
We put in, for the SAFER grant, to put a Monday to Friday firefighter in the Heat Beach Fire Station to augment the volunteer staff, because we only have one active person there. To the Monday to Friday, we don't have any response. So that was the goal with the SAFER grant.
So the grant is for $200,000+, but it is spread out over 3 years, 75 for the first two.
And then maybe 35 on the third year.
Okay.
And then the idea with the SAFER grant is they try to build it so you can make smaller adjustments to your financial, security there. So instead of doing year one, you have to come up with everything to make it more manageable to get to that point.
Because I took a double check when I saw that. Thank you. That's a job well done. Thank you.
Yes. I want to ask you, there was someone that mentioned recently in one of these meetings about the roof and Steen Hatchie. And was that?
Excuse me, Keaton roof.
Well, it was in Keaton Beach.
Yes, ma'am.
That we were having equipment that could be ruined or wasn't. What is your take on that?
We are getting estimates from contractors right now, so as soon as we start the fiscal year, part of the SAFER grant is we have to do some modifications to accept having somebody from Monday to Friday, and that's part of that project.
Okay,
so
we're
underway with it right now. And so right. We've got the funding already set up for it, and we're getting all the estimates now, so this way, as soon as we're in the next fiscal year, we can start with the project. Okay. So it's under control.
Thank you. Is there a motion?
A motion.
Second.
A motion by Commissioner Freitas, second by Commissioner Gibbs. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Fair enough.
Thank you. Begins. General business, there is none. County attorney items, there are none. County administrator items, number 21. The county administrator to discuss informational items.
Yeah, well, we have the chief here, and in this anyway. You're above the state of emergency in accepting these forms, working private property. We had a total of 75 requests, and as of today, they've all been evaluated. Is that correct? I'm going to say thanks, chief. You've done a good job in doing that. Out of the 75 that have been evaluated, 27 were not approved, 31 have been approved, and I understand 11 have been concluded.
So that's
all for that. And I do want to say thank you to Chief for the response to the impact explosion and keeping us informed and letting us know for your response and your guys. Appreciate that.
On that note, with the road assessments, as you know, roads have continued to come in, properties and so forth, and we're telling people that the state of emergency has passed. But I know I do, and I'm sure the other commissioners go out when we get these. We still go and review them, and if we see an issue and a problem, we would like that added to a list somehow, simply for public safety. I know that you went with Commissioner Moody, looking for alternate means, in case of a call, and I've got some of those. So that's the reason I wanted some of those addresses. Not something for you to do an immediate road repair and assessment, but 911 needs to know whether or not there are issues if they get a call.
On that. You're asking my opinion. I think we should probably come up with, if these forms are going to be used for local state emergencies, we should have a process for that. And then if we have, after non-local state emergencies, we should have another process to separate them. Because if we're accepting the same forms, we may be giving the public the idea that we're going to evaluate and give them the wrong impression. I think we need to come up with another way of when these other ones come in that is questionable, we can evaluate them and then we can advise them and say, yes, we will have problems. so they know they need to start doing some repairs so that we can provide service.
I wasn't looking at a form. I wasn't looking at that form at all. But if you think that would be prudent, you know, certainly.
I think it would be beneficial if we could do something like that. I mean, between all the different emergency services and, like I said, dispatch. Dispatch should get to be notified that, even if it's not an evaluation, that said it's given to dispatch to say, if you dispatch out to this address, have a note in the CAD system that there may be issues. Now, it might not have to have a full evaluation, just some sort of a note in their CAD system.
Okay. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, but that would go through the sheriff's office.
I thought a couple of Fridays ago that we ended that. I didn't know that anybody was still turning runs in.
Oh, Lord.
I feel like that we needed a separate process. I know if I have any calls, then I just turn them in like any regular call that I get, and then it's up to the county administrator to decide.
I would recommend that if we know there's road repairs, if roads are shut down, those are normally conveyed through, I don't know if it's emergency management or just dispatch. But I know dispatch gets roads that are going to be closed and shut down, so this way when they send out fire, law enforcement, EMS, that they can tell us ahead of time, you will not be able to travel down this road. I think something similar to that is what we should do, where if there is a problem with a private roadway, a private driveway, it needs to go through dispatch, so this way it can be conveyed to all of the different agencies. That would be my recommendation.
Okay. Staff can work that out.
They would not be, I just want to make sure I understand. So those requests, I just send them straight to dispatch, or do we need to ask emergency management?
I think it should be given to them as an informational item, not so much as an evaluation, but so dispatch can give the emergency responders, you know, ahead notice you may have issues with this. That's how I would recommend it.
Before the state of emergency, that's what I did. I sent Chuck Mincy an email saying this road is, and outlined it, and asked him to notify 911, and they put it in their CAD system. So we can continue to do that. I don't know that it needs an evaluation, but I would certainly want to CC you. You would be, not that 911 won't go out and find an alternate route, where you might.
Yeah, and like I said, CCing me, like I said, if it's something that concerned, we would look for alternate routes. But I think giving it to dispatch, not as an evaluation, but as an informational item, so when they get dispatched to that address, it's given out, like I said, to all the emergency responders. I think that would be our best route.
What they really need to know, if they need to send a brush truck down there first that can go through a bad road, instead of sending a regular fire truck down there. Send a regular fire truck, that took 10 minutes to get down there, and then they had to order a brush truck to get in there after you burnt down. So that's the main thing.
And, excuse me, Commissioner, the EMS has a four-wheel drive. They can send the four-wheel drive.
That's exactly right. Me and Mr. Dan went around and marked back routes to get to people's house because you couldn't go down the front. He put flagging up on the truck. So where ambulance came there or a fire truck, there's another route to go into their mailbox address and then trying to go that way. So it'll work that way.
Well, I've still got some underwater that you can't evaluate. You know what I mean? So it's just going to be, your Navy going in there to take care of some of those.
Thank you. Okay. I would still like to have a detail as we go along with this process, the roads that are left. I still would like to have the data on what district it is, what road it is, and how much we're spending. And
keep the spreadsheet
back. Yes. Yeah.
One other item, there will be a meeting of the Gulf Consortium next week. Mr. Moody will kick it back and forth. He's going to go. He cannot attend, so I will be going. The meeting's actually the 27th, but it's part of an innovative policy conference. I'd like to go take advantage of that conference. So the conference is the 26th and 27th. So I'll be out of the office most of next week.
Where's the meeting to be
held? Charlotte County.
Where?
It's in Charlotte County.
Oh, probably then
it will almost be unfortunate.
Okay. Anything else?
No, sir.
Okay. Item 22, comments and concerns from the public for non-agenda items. If you're here and you wish to speak on something that was not on the agenda, you may come forward and state your name and address.
Thank you. My name is Ken Hutchins. I used to call me Dr. Hutchins, but I'm retired. Back in January, I appeared before the board and I made a lot of comments in reference to the funding program for the top three companies for the oil spill money. At that time, the board, by unanimous decision, if you want to call it that, agreed that the issue should be put on a workshop. I suggested at that time that all the property owners involved be notified to participate where they set forth any positives or negatives. Nothing has been done. It was not put on the workshop agenda. We have wasted 9 months. Now, during that 9 month period, the draft SEP, and I provided copies to all the commissioners, set forth 10 or 11 possible grant opportunities. 9 or 10 months have went by. The grants coordinator has not had the opportunity to look into this because the board has did nothing. We've wasted opportunities. Wasted opportunities. I'm disappointed. I would like right now for the county administrator or Commissioner Malik to give the board a status report as to what is happening with the POP 3 program and what does Taylor County need to do now. So if I can ask for that,
yes.
Can we get it? From either one of them or both?
Yes.
I can tell you a little bit right now.
Yeah, could you come so we can hear it, please?
The Gulf Consortium has been meeting for 7 years. Just recently, in the last few months, they did finalize the state expenditure plan. That's why we had to get our projects into that state expenditure plan. That is not set in stone. The projects are not set in stone. We can, as this move, it's approved by the state, and as we move forward, we can change that. Because we'll have to submit grant applications. So when it gets to a point where you will submit grant applications, we can envision submit different applications. So there's nothing 100% set in stone. We're not obligated to these properties. Our concept is access to the coast, either boat ramps, improved roads, other things we can come up with. I feel like we'll have to stay within that concept, access to the coast, but there's a lot of leeway in that concept.
Could you speak to the allegation that we wasted 9 or 10 months? Are we behind?
We are not behind. I think the whole process is. The whole process has been going on for 7 years. I mean, it's just amazing that this bureaucratic animal is going on. And Mr. Moody's and he's been, you know, we've been went to the meetings together.
We're not behind yet. In the last 2 years, the meetings, in my opinion, has just been a dog and pony show. Yeah. It's followed the same line, hurry up and wait. We haven't missed any deadline. We have not, in no way, missed anything that's been given to anybody.
No. We have not missed any opportunities.
Is it true that the other 22 counties on the Gulf Coast have submitted plans and we're the only county that has not?
No, that's not the case.
That's
the other counties have submitted plans. All the counties are in the state expenditure report with plans.
Could have been interrupted. Including ours?
Yes.
So we should make a plan?
Yes. Our plan is improved access to the Gulf Coast, either with property purchases, improved boat ramps, possibly improved roads. But as this money is, as this is more fully developed, we will have to submit individual grants to obtain this money. For example, we have 11 possible property purchases. Somewhere in the future, we'll have to submit a grant for making one property purchase with improved boat ramps, if that, or improved access. So, no, we have not missed any opportunities. Some counties have more defined projects. For example, improved water sewer, actual hands-on engineered projects, but it runs the gamut all the way to different projects.
Yeah, now, I'm a little confused. Mm-hmm. Do you submit the grant prior to us receiving the funds, or do you wait until the funds come first and then submit the grant?
No,
or is it advantage one way or the other?
What I understand, they will approve this big state expenditure plan, and then working with the Gulf Consortium through them, we'll submit grants for these individual projects.
And we'll have a
pool of $13 million. And that's going to be spread over a number of years, probably 20 years, I believe. So, fortunately, we were looking at getting a lot of our money in the beginning, and then some out in later years. So, as this money rolls in, we will have the opportunity to Treasury, the Department of Treasury, to submit grants to get our individual projects.
At one point in time, we had a consulting company that was going to assist our grant writer in doing these grants. Mm-hmm. And then this person, if I remember, had a conflict and had to withdraw. Do we have anybody that's a professional helping our grant writer and our staff?
There's two POTs. There is the POT money, the POT 1 money, which is our direct to the county, $4.1 million. We have a consultant on board that's writing the grant for the canal dredging work.
That's POT 1?
That's POT 1, yes.
That's canal dredging.
That's canal dredging.
Not land purchase.
No, that's $4.1 million. Okay. The POT 3 money is controlled, or is going through the Gulf Consortium. They are going to write their grants for us at some point in the future.
Okay.
The Gulf Consortium is getting all the consultant monies to do that. So they're going to be in control of that, and we'll be submitting them. We'll be working with those guys directly to submit grants to them.
Okay.
Do we have a timeline?
No, we don't.
From the Gulf Consortium on?
We don't. They were so happy that they finally got that state expenditure plan done this summer. And maybe we'll know more after this meeting next week when we get a better report. No, we don't have time.
I
would like to respond to some of that. I brought the initiative here to the board. Bring the board up to date on everything. All right, back in January, like I said, I provided the board some documents. At that time, I gave the board a copy of what's called the draft SEP. All right, the recommended schedule by the Gulf Consortium at that time was in 2018. That the board should, all right, start to conduct their feasibility studies and get their appraisals. This is in black and white. All right, this is in the draft SEP. I will provide you now with the final SEP. It says the same thing, 2018. Funds will be dispersed in the year 2019 after some duties undertaken by. Let me just pass these on out here.
Thank you.
I'll give you a copy. A copy to you folks. All right, so basically, Taylor County's not going to get a dime unless you put a grant together. That SCP doesn't give you a dime. Like I said earlier, you've wasted 9 months. I'm speaking for myself and other property owners involved that I spoke with. They're concerned too. What's going on? What's going on? We asked for a workshop. 9 months, and we're still waiting on the workshop. You need a workshop, you need to invite the property owners, get everybody together, and it's not going to be a 15-minute workshop. But you need to do something. Doing something is better than doing nothing. Those who stand in line first with the POT 3 money, whenever these grants start going in, all right, to the Restore Council, they're going to get the money first. Where's Taylor County going to be? In the back of the line? Doing something is better than doing nothing. I, as a taxpayer, not only am I disappointed, I'm embarrassed for the fact that the county commission has did nothing. Nothing has been done. you're looking at something that's going to affect the people of Taylor County for years to come. I have a vested interest, as do these other property owners, some of them I spoke with. They're still doing something is better than doing nothing. I ask that the workshop be scheduled, the property owners be invited, and let's get the job done. I'm tired of seeing the can kicked down the road. Thank you.
I remember him requesting that workshop, and I remember that we agreed to have a workshop, and it does appear like we dropped the ball. What happened?
We have not dropped the ball.
What happened in terms of the workshop?
We have a scheduled workshop. We haven't dropped the ball on this project. I respectfully disagree, but we can schedule a workshop in the future.
Okay, but he asked for one in January.
If you will check the minutes of January 16th.
I remember.
All right, it was an agreement by the board to have a workshop. It was never put on the agenda for the workshop, period.
Do we have a good excuse for why it wasn't put on?
I don't know if we have a good excuse. We can schedule a workshop. I don't know if it'd be productive. We certainly can schedule a workshop.
Well, I agree with the thought that we need to be proactive, and we need to be getting our ducks in a row. The 22 counties have done that. I hate to be the last one to, you know, to...
Madam Chairman, we are not the last one. We have our ducks in a row on this issue.
If I may say something, the documents I've given to everybody include some email correspondence that I've had with the Gulf Consortium. It also includes some comments that the FDEP made in part reference to Taylor County. If you'll check the emails, I will send you this afternoon, later today, every one of you, a copy of the comments from FWC in reference to Dallas Creek and Higgins Cove. Take those, print them off, put them with your package, read over them. This way you'll be ready for workshop. And if you excuse my voice, I'd like to trade down on me. I don't talk like this.
Well, what are we going to accomplish when we put this on the workshop? If we're already up to date and doing everything we can do, what's the outcome of the workshop? I mean,
discuss it. I guess whether to discuss how you want to go with your concept of improving access to church.
As what?
In the state expenditure plan, when he passed out, you voted to submit those properties moving forward. Your concept was to improve access, public access to the coast. Either purchasing properties to improve boat ramps, or parks, or kayak launches. We even talked about improving roads to the coast. Whatever, it has to be within 25 miles of the coast, what I understand. Whatever we can do to improve our access, make it better for the public to enjoy the coast. That's what Taylor County's concept is. Now, when this money actually gets approved, we'll be submitting individual grants to go after this money. Go out of boat, we'll submit an individual grant to approve a boat ramp in that area and whatever. That's how we can spend this money. And it will be staged over 20 years. And the last spreadsheet I saw had us kind of toward the front line at about $5 million, first 3 or 4 years. So I don't feel like we're behind the eight ball on this at all. I really don't.
Okay, not long ago, I think it was with DOT that was here, and we discussed dead man's curve. Mm-hmm. And perhaps, you know, being able to straighten that curve out somewhat so it would not be so dangerous as it had been with the fatalities there. And they recommended that we start looking at properties and have we started that process?
I directed Kenneth to do that. We have to purchase that property.
He was directed at that time? Yes, has he done anything?
No, I can follow. We would be up for a scot or scrap grant if we were to have that land.
Yeah.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
You're just a dead man's curve. Maybe you're heading west. All right. You're going to get
four bumper strips to more or less tell you to slow down. If you miss the curve, you go straight down toward the Avenue Beach. Chances are you're not going to have a problem. Alright? But what if you come the other way? Alright? There's two bumper strips that are actually raised. The other two are more or less flat. I think they have that in reverse. Because if you come in, if you're heading north, you're going to run into the trees. You're going to kill yourself. At least the other way, going west, you're going to go down toward Adams Creek. There's a chance you won't have the right. Someone needs to look down, look through the ears for somebody and get those bumper strips there.
Well, I know after 2001, when my mother and aunt lost their lives on that curve, and they did not go straight. They obviously tried to go around the curve, because when you realize, for whatever reason they're there, sometimes, obviously, you don't just think, well, just go straight.
You want to make that turn.
So, yeah, you try to make that turn, and it's all happening within just a second.
But the thing is you sort of have people in early morning with the curve. There's a lot of people who come in our area that are unfamiliar with that dead-end curve, where you and I are not.
Yeah, and we, at that time, what I was going to say is, back then, the strips were totally run out. And the county replaced those sometime after that. And now they're getting run again.
Well, the strips going north, two of them out. So that needs to be looked at. And Commissioner?
I'm about to ask staff. There are two. The second set of two there are worn out. They need to be replaced.
Do you have anything else on the BP?
Everything to do with the pot three, we need to have a workshop. We need to invite the property owners. I spoke to several of them, all right? And they're wondering what's going on. Let's put all of this in the basket, shake it up at a workshop. And it's not going to be done in 15 minutes. All right? Everybody can bring their positives and negatives, and they can challenge whatever. But it needs to be a good workshop. You have documents there, you have correspondence from the Gulf Consortium to me. All right, I'll send you some more documents in that quarter. FWC, let's put them together and let's get the job done once and for all. 2018 is a recommended feasibility study, all right, and appraisal. Alright, after some administrative duties by the Gulf Consortium in 2019, and grants were to follow or be submitted to the Restore Council. Ladies and gentlemen, that's in black and white. Don't take my word for it and read it.
I would say that we put that on the next workshop as the first item on the workshop, so we'll have enough time to address it. Make sure we notify these property owners that have indicated that their properties are available, and let's go ahead and get the process started.
Well, I would say I am vested interest, as you all know.
Yes.
But I'm speaking on behalf of a couple of so of the other property owners.
In your study on behalf,
I had spoken with them.
Did they tell you who was going to pay for the appraisal?
Who's going to what?
Pay for the appraisal.
Appraisal?
Yeah.
If you look at the documents I gave you on it, they had put forth the cost of the feasibility study at $300,000, which is ridiculous. All right? They put together, they threw in a cost of $100,000 for appraisals.
Yep.
All right? If you establish a priority list and say you take 1, 2, and 3, you've got a maximum of 3 appraisals, all right? It's not going to be $100,000, trust me, all right? But if you put your packages together, put your grants together, all right, you can be reimbursed, all right? If it meets the guidelines, you can be reimbursed for the appraisals and the feasibility study. I don't think you need to go and hire some consultant to do a feasibility study, all right, a major study. Because all we have to do is look at the properties along the coast and apply what's usually referred to as common sense.
and we can eliminate some of them.
I understand that, but there's no money being put out to do a feasibility study yet, so we just can't go hire people to go do that research and do the appraisals and, you know, without some money first. That's what Ms. Lake is trying to say. It hadn't been appropriated yet to do anything like that.
Well, I understand that. Initially, you had 21 properties, all right? Somewhere along the road, that was whittled down to 8. There's 8 now being put forth, all right, and that minority too. Somebody decided to whittle it down to 8. I can't find a record of it being reduced from 21 to 8. All right, and until you do your primary study and do your sanitation projects, you don't have to worry about a feasibility study at the cost. You got to come up with number one, number two, number three, number four first. That's the first step. Money comes later, expenditures come later. Just good common sense planning. That's all, you know, that's all myself and a couple of others have to do.
Comments or questions? Okay. Thank you. Anybody else would like to come forward with and speak about anything that was not on the agenda? Which way, you all have anything today?
I guess you want to hear the current update on Stephen Springs.
Bring it on.
Come on. I hope everything is good.
As you remember, Stephen Springs had a natural occurrence about 3 months ago, 3 to 4 months ago. In working with the county here and with the water district, we started an inspection program on a daily basis for the first couple of months. In recording it. And when the natural occurrence happened, the level in the spring pool rose about 40, 44 inches. And that effectively extra pressure forced the spring flow to go underneath the wall. The wall is still strong enough to where it's going under, it will not damage the wall. In the initial time, it put up 5 or 6 small spring heads in the spring run. Over that time to now, they've all consolidated into one large spring head. It's about 36 inches in width and about 21 inches in depth. It's flowing really good. It's clear water. In the inspection process, we checked the spring pool depth from top to wall at low tide and at high tide. At low tide, the water is lower in the spring pool. It ran from about 33, 34 to 38. At high tide, because the water in the spring run was higher and it was putting back pressure on the flow from the two spring heads coming under the wall, the pressure, the water level in the spring pool is higher than at low tide. Part of the water, when the tide is high in the run, is causing the flow of the springs to flow into the pool and help keep it clean. At low tide, it's running out, which is flushing the pool. The current state is that there's no algae buildup in the pool. There's still depth to where people are using the pool in the park for swimming. And that will slow down because of the type, the year we're going into. I've been told by the water district, if I see a algae buildup in the pool, to be concerned and get the health department to check the water. If we do not see that, and the water keeps flowing clear under the wall, that there should be no health concerns. That because of the way the wall was designed and the rebar and the weight of the concrete, the PSI rate, that there should be no problem there. So basically, we have natural cycles, rain interferes with it, it extenderates, wrong word, it makes it worse or bad, or better. It's something that I have to get used to, it's something that you should get used to, because we can't control nature. The people that use the park don't want to get used to it, some of them. They want the high water in the pool. In talking to some of the longtime residents that used that spring 40, 50 years ago, 60 years ago, at times through the nature cycle, the spring flow went down to where it was only ankle high. Other times they had 3 or 4 foot of water before any real wall was built. You've got a good spring, you've got a good park. We have to get used to the cycles of nature. It's being watched. If anything looks like there'll be a health problem, it will be pursued. On the historic side for the park, the wall, those of you that's been down there recently, you've seen two more panels put up. One on the winner, which was a head boat or charter boat for fishing in the 60s. A lot of information is going on. In the last month, we've had two more families come forward, and they've started on their research to put their history on the wall. If you have questions, I'll try to answer them. That's a thumbnail sketch where you're at now.
How does the depth fluctuate from what to what? In the swimming hole itself.
Okay. It probably goes, because I haven't been in the water lately, because it's cold spring water, from 4 to 5 feet up to 6. If you go over where the spring heads are, at the spring head itself, they're still over 10 feet deep. The majority of the rest of the bottom is the, say, 4 to 6 feet.
Okay, when I was down there, I don't remember, do we have no diving signs, danger, no diving around there?
We have signs that say keep off the rocks. We have signs that say keep off the wall, no dot, just keep off the wall, period. If there aren't a wall, they're violating the rules. If they go on the rocks, they're violating the rules. They're taking the liability on themselves.
I wonder if we should have just the caution to have no diving signs.
That's up to your choice.
Yes.
Be a good idea.
And it seems like it.
Be a good idea.
Say?
Be a good idea.
Yes. I think the staff, we need to have that put in.
Okay. I'll check the signs again and make sure we have a half dozen things in the signs.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for the update and for your work on that project.
Madam Chair, I've got to mention one thing.
Yes.
That SEP that I provided everybody, the bulk control, has approved it.
I went from the mayor, I went to the governor, they reviewed it, they approved it. Right now, it's sitting in the restore council, and they expect it to be approved on or before the 27th of this month. All right, it may be approved now, but that is the final of the CP. It's went through all the approvals, with the exception of the one we're waiting on right now.
Anybody else? Thank you for that. Item 23, board informational items, Commissioner Shradlin?
The only thing I have is for the board, we'll need to consider a future date in workshop, maybe the Gulf Consortium workshop, a bypass route for the boat ramp in Steam Hatchie, and maybe one at Keaton Beach.
Yes.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Commissioner Demps.
Okay.
Mr. Page.
I had a call from a lady who owns property at Fish Creek, adjacent to a site that was identified by our marine agent, Victor Blanco, I believe his name. And she's very much opposed to this project being adjacent to her property. And she asked me some questions that I did not know the answers to, very specific. So the one that I volunteered is your phone number. So you'll probably be getting a call from Rosemary this afternoon. And somebody needs to get you up to date. Victor was under a time frame to get this grant submitted. And we told him he needed to advertise. And he said he'd advertise on social media, which doesn't meet our criteria for advertising. Did we ever actually submit the application? Of course, you can answer all those questions from Rosemary this afternoon.
I can
answer. He did not submit the application because we could not get an extension.
Couldn't get it all together. Couldn't
get, get an extension, so we just dropped.
Yeah, we dropped. Right. That's all of our problem. That's all I have.
Commissioner
Moody. I haven't got anything.
Okay. Yeah, I've got two things. I just want to let the board know how disgusted I am with the state attorney's office on the Combe case. They assigned a special prosecutor for that. He came and visited with me, looked at some of the audits, and before he could even get the first copy of an audit from my office, they dismissed those charges. There is a lot of people in this county that was affected by that action. I wrote him a letter, I've done everything that I know to do at this point. But it's disgusting to know, and there's been concern about how much it cost to do that audit. Did it cost the taxpayer $1? Because I did the audit myself at home at night. I have all the documented notes that was done on every individual audit in every case. Those notes, plus the agreement that he signed, will be scanned to come and know what CCIS is. It's a statewide data criminal base that we put all of our documents in. And those records are going to be scanned into that statewide system with a copy of that agreement. And you know, what concerns me is they signed the agreement and they never contacted me in any way. They never asked, they never seen an audit, they never done anything. It's called politics, is what it's called. And a lot of people is paying the price for that. I've got some that I've got proof that they paid and never did a phone call. So my concern is that his case got swept under the rug, and you got people that walk into local businesses and steal $10 worth of food, and they get prosecuted to the limit. That's my concern. And it's not fair to what happened in that case, but it's been said and done. And I want the board to know, I have completed the audit on East Coast. Your copy is in the box. Please get it before you leave today. And please read that audit. Conrad has looked at it, every step of it. We've got information in there that you need to be concerned about. So I would say, read it, and when y'all get through reading it, let me know.
and I'll ask the chairman to call a special meeting. I have tried to deal with the person who owns that. I've sent him letters. You got a copy of the last letter that the report didn't balance. I've not heard one word from him. And this audit report was mailed to him on 5 certified return receipts, because it counted $15 to send it to him. And they signed for it on August 3rd. And in the letter that was in his audit report, I gave him 20 days to contact me, so let's look over the audit and see if he's concerned about what was going on. I have not heard one word from him today. The board, this is your contract. Y'all need to be looking at it too. And Conrad, he knows what violations are. Y'all just need to be looking at that and reading what's in that thing. And you don't be shocked just like I was. So I'd ask you to do that when you've read it and you're ready to discuss what's in it, let me know. I will set up a special meeting with the chairman and we'll go through it. So that's my report. And another thing is, I don't remember, I know Thomas, you're the chairman of the Value Adjustment Board.
Mm-hmm.
Please look at those emails when you get them. Every year, I'm short on people who come to that meeting. I have to get on the phone and call, when are you going to get here? That is a valuable process in complying with the treatments. That's the final process you have. So look at those emails and see when you're supposed to be here, and please be here on time. Because, you know, we got a court reporter, we got an attorney, and it costs money when you're not prepared to start. So, and I will have the manuals. The Department of Revenue has not completed the revision to the manuals this year. I've been in constant contact with them, and you know how thick they are. They're just thick.
Mm-hmm.
We have to copy that and provide a copy for all board members and the public. So we're pushed for time, so we have got to certify the last time on, I think it's the 3rd week in October. So pay attention when you get those emails, because it's very important. Okay? So,
okay, thank you. Mr. Bishop?
I gotta go. I don't have anything. I got court.
Anybody else? Okay. The only thing that I've got is I've got a call.
May I go?
Yes, you can.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate y'all.
I got a call, I think it was last week, from a lady, Ms. Shaw, who said that she had gone to the Carlton roll-off and that they went twice in one day, and that they were never asked for any kind of identification.
I got the same call.
You got the same call. And she said that in addition to that, that the roll-off attendant didn't even come out and speak or offer to help or anything. And she was really complaining about that situation there. I didn't realize. Did anybody else get a call?
I got the call on my recorder. I listened to it, but I didn't get involved and did not call her back. Since Carlton is our model roll-off site, and her complaint was the guy didn't get out of the stairs. She had a little 10, I think she said.
Yeah, 10.
You know, I wouldn't expect the attendant to get out there and unload a tray, but a little 10. Now, she's an elderly person, you could offer to help. That's never a generous thing to do. But I thought probably Jim got the call and he didn't have that.
No, I didn't get the call.
In the Mrs. Shaw, she did. You live on the beach road?
I think so.
I think that's where she lived.
Yeah.
So she was a little bit irate at the attendant there.
Which site did she go to? Carlton.
Yeah. And there was a gentleman there, and she said he sat in the chair and didn't do nothing. And she was a little irate, but this her. Spending her tax money for somebody sitting in the chair doing nothing.
You can find out what day and time. I'll find out who that was.
She had a load, what you said, she had a load of 10?
I believe in the message she left on my recorder that she had a load of 10.
And she said they went twice, I believe she said.
Yeah.
And they've never asked for an ID or anything. I had a complaint from a citizen about the Bernard Johnson roll-off, that one attendant there will not get up at all. And it's not dated. So whoever else is there, they said they will not
will not get up.
Harrison blew up my tents. I got in front of you. When I drive up, I don't even have to get out of the truck.
Well, that's how my Chevy broke people are, too.
They're in the back of that truck. You have to make sure I'm in the back.
On 99 Tunnel across the cemetery, I can tell you, I've seen it day and night, and I go by there all the time. They help me.
They help.
Thank you. I can give them credit for it. And I appreciate it. I tell them that.
I'm sure the reporter come back if it didn't happen. But
I got a call. Somebody lived on Golf Road, and they say he went to call the cemetery. And they were very appreciative of the one that was down there.
Yeah.
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 Okay, I don't have anything else either. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Move with adjourn.
Right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
May you adjourn.
Yes, we're supposed to sign. Supposed to sign that declaration, Jim. Jim. Supposed to sign that resolution.
Okay.
Dan's
that's the one that made the final decision what we did.